Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones.
The corrupt U.S. government is bankrupting the economy and igniting a third world war while flooding the border with single. The corrupt U.S. government is bankrupting the economy and igniting a third world war while flooding the border with single military-aged men. The media continues to divide us along party lines with another rigged election, while Hollywood tries to goad the people into a second civil war. And while this is all happening, humanity is being slow-killed with technologies that only serve to isolate and track us. 9 years ago, hundreds of scientists were warning us of the dangers of cell phones and 5G radiation.
I'm Dr. Martin Blank from the Department of Physiology and Cellular Biophysics at Columbia University. We are scientists and engineers, and I'm here to tell you we have created something that is harming us, and it is getting out of control. The incidence of fatal brain cancer in younger people has more than tripled. We are putting cellular antennas on residential buildings and on top of hospitals where people are trying to get well. It's particularly frightening that radiation from our telecommunication and power line technology is damaging the DNA in our cells. The time to deal with the harmful biological and health effects is long overdue. We are really all part of a large biological experiment without our informed consent.
And things have only gotten worse. Millions have been murdered with a mandated mystery injection, which has debilitated even more and infected the living with nanotechnologies that are linking us with machines. An artificial intelligence grid is being built around us, and the people have never been more divided. And if we fail to unite, the future of humanity is destined to be grim. In Ronald Reagan's famous 1987 speech, he referred to an alien threat that could unite humanity.
I occasionally think how quickly our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world. And yet, I ask you, is not an alien force already among us?
And regardless of what he was referring to 37 years ago, that alien threat is here today. It is the anti-human artificial intelligence that humanity is giving birth to.
Sentient artificial intelligence, far beyond human beings. You give it 1,000 years alone to make better and better versions of itself. Where does that go? That goes to a god. It literally can create universes.
But what kind of god? So, like, I think of it this way. So the first stage of the Industrial Revolution consisted of people building machines that were stronger than the human body.
Right.
Right? So the steam-powered loom.
Sure.
The backhoe.
Combustion engine.
They replace muscles.
Right.
Right. So that's what the machine does. It becomes stronger than the human body. The second stage, which we're in the middle of, consists of creating machines that are more powerful than the human mind. That's what computing is. And I would say AI or supercomputing is just that exponentially.
Yeah.
But that doesn't make it a god in the sense that the machine, however powerful it is, any more than a backhoe is a god, mm-hmm. because it can dig a trench faster than 100 men, it's still something that people created. So the story hasn't really changed. At the center of the story are people, and their creative power may lead to unintended consequences, but the machines that they build did not make the universe and did not make people. People made the machines.
Right.
So I would say the part I agree with is there's a spiritual component here for sure. People will worship AI as a god. AI, Ted Kaczynski was likely right, will get away from us. We will be controlled by the thing that we made. All those are bad. Like, that's just bad. And we need to say unequivocally, it's bad. It's bad to be controlled by machines.
Right.
Machines are helpmates. Like, we created them to help us, to make our lives better, not to take orders from them. So I don't know why we're not having any of these conversations right now. We're just acting as if this is like some kind of virus, like COVID, that just spreads across the world inexorably. There's nothing we can do about it. Just wait to get it. It's like, no. If we agree that the outcome is bad, and specifically it's bad for people, we should care what's good for people. That's all we should care about. Is it good for people or not? If it's bad for people, then we should strangle it in its crib right now.
Right.
And one is blow up the data centers. Like, I don't, why is that hard? If it's actually going to become what you just described, which is a threat to people, humanity, life, then we have a moral obligation to murder it immediately. And since it's not alive, we don't need to feel bad about that.
One of the things you've been talking about on your show is your allegation that government officials are aiding in pedophilia, child trafficking, and the grooming of children, right?
What do you mean, like what Jeffrey Epstein did with the Clintons?
Show, ladies and gentlemen, I am Chase Geyser, your host this morning into this afternoon. We have a wild show ahead. It's going to be very exciting. Alex called me about an hour and a half ago and asked me to fill in because he is having a family emergency this morning. There is a member of his family who apparently is in critical condition. So please, your prayers for Alex and his loved ones. He will be back in studio as soon as possible. So I, Chase Geyser, am hosting on this Wednesday, April 24th, 2024, as we come up on the most pivotal election in the history of the United States of America. At the top of the next hour, we are going to have Harrison Smith joining us, and then the great Owen Schroyer at the top of the hour after that. So we've got some great hosts lined up today, great guests lined up today, and this incredible news has come across the desk. FDA says bird flu found in cow's milk. Now, there have been a number of stories over the course of the last year about cow's milk and arrests related to raw milk and the crackdown on milk. And I was doing some research. This has been some time since I've done the research, so you'll have to correct me if I'm wrong. But I believe our milk, our grocery store milk here in the United States of America, is illegal in like 200 countries or something. So the stuff that you buy at the store is not considered healthy by many nations across the globe. Yet our government seems to believe that raw milk is a danger to public health. And now they're coming out and saying that bird flu is found in this cow's milk. And before I get into the details of this story, I just want to point out, why is it that every single election season, we seem to have a new outbreak? It was the swine flu in 2008. Then it was Ebola in 2012. It seems like every single time we're about ready to go into an election, there's some sort of weird testing of fear-mongering of some new disease. Now, we know since the most recent pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic, for lack of a better term, there has been talk among globalists all over the world of disease X. Now we hear more and more reports of this bird flu. And it's always a bird. When they really want to spook you, it's always a bird for some reason. I think it goes back to influenza being associated with birds. And they want everyone to think back to that terrible, terrible pandemic that occurred about 100 years ago, a little over 100 years ago now. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration, FDA, has issued an alert Tuesday, which indicated that highly pathogenic avian influenza, AH5 and AH7 virus, HPAI, has been detected in pasteurized cow's milk weeks after novel influenza A, H5N1 avian flu, was detected in a human after the man was in contact with dairy cows. Now, we're going to run clip 24 here in a second, the clip associated with this article, but I want to read this quote to you. The U.S. Department of Agriculture, USDA, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, FDA, and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, along with state partners, continue to investigate an outbreak of highly pathogenic avian influenza, HPAI virus, impacting dairy cows in multiple states. So we're going to run this clip and then unpack it.
Infected with bird flu. After a dairy worker in nearby Texas was infected with bird flu, New Mexico dairy producer Jared Cooper put his farm on lockdown. He restricted people from coming in and has begun separating and treating sick cows from other animals.
First, it was like, oh, man, I hope this doesn't happen to me. And that's the first thing that goes through your mind. It's over there. But then it becomes reality when you start to think, well, this is something that's migrating and migrating pretty fast.
Now that the bird flu outbreak has spread to more than 24 herds of cattle in 8 states, he is concerned on the effect it will have on dairy farmers.
If you ask me, overall milk prices, they've been terrible. And with that, this has been a hard thing to handle amongst the dairy industry because we've already been at a suppressed milk price.
The bird flu has been killing U.S. chickens for a few years, but the infection of a dairy worker in Texas has health officials concerned because it's the first known case of a person catching this version of bird flu from a mammal. In addition to the Texas dairy worker, an individual from Colorado working with poultry was diagnosed with bird flu in 2022. Although U.S. officials say the risk for the public is low, the prospect of continued cases worries some.
So, no, this virus is not going to cause the next big pandemic. The worry is, will a mutation of this virus and learn to transmit very easily person to person, that is, one person gets it and another human being can catch it from them, then we really have to worry.
Agriculture officials in at least 17 states have restricted imports of dairy cattle from states where the virus has been detected. Still, U.S. health officials say commercially processed milk is still safe to drink. Martin Markovitz, TRT World, Clovis, New Mexico.
So, just absolutely incredible to me, the audacity of these globalist institutions. And I know technically they're United States institutions like the FDA and the USDA and the CDC, but they've really been hijacked by the WHO and turned into globalist institutions. But the audacity of these institutions to come out and try to fearmonger about this disease after what we saw in terms of lying regarding the pandemic is just overwhelming to me. And what's even more terrifying to me is there is a large number of people in the United States of America who are just going to fall for it again. I mean, we still see people in various clips of leftists that we show, and frankly, in public, if you go to an airport or any public venue, you will still see people wearing masks despite the fact that the efficacy of masks has been proven totally illegitimate. Frankly, the EPA came out with a study during COVID that ranked all of the different types of masks based on their efficacy at preventing the spread of viruses. And the type of masks that everyone was wearing were less effective than putting a bandana on your face. But I remember this very distinctly because my daughter was born prematurely in the middle of this pandemic here in Austin, Texas. And when we went to the hospital, I was wearing a bandana on my face because they required a mask in the hospital. We were in the NICU, which is the intensive care unit for newborn children. And the hospital was like, hey, you can't wear that bandana. You have to wear one of our masks that we give you at the door. And they were like these yellow jaundice looking masks that they were handing out. And they would make your throat scratch. There was some metal or something laced in the mask itself that was supposed to be antiviral. And I remember looking up this EPA study and seeing that bandanas were more effective than the masks that were being handed out. Certainly the way that people were wearing these masks, it's different than an N95 properly worn. And thinking to myself, wow, it's amazing that even the EPA admits that there are better, more effective ways to cover your face during this pandemic, but it's insisting on this uniform paper mask look, this disposable mask look, because frankly, if you're wearing a bandana, you look like a rebel. You look like an outlaw. You look like somebody who isn't complying or doesn't buy into the narrative of the CDC and the government during this pandemic. So they would rather have me be more at risk wearing their crappy mask than less at risk wearing a mask that seemed too counter-narrative. That was what really woke me up. I mean, there were several things that really woke me up. Even if you looked at the data of the pandemic early on in 2020, the numbers did not justify the disproportionate response that we saw from our own government. It was obvious something was amiss very early out of the gate. Alex Jones predicted things like this years and years ago, months and months before they happened. But looking at the data in real time, anybody with critical thinking skills knew that they were exaggerating the danger and risks associated with this pandemic for a political purpose. And then the mask thing was just like the straw that broke the camel's back for me, where I was like, what is going on here? So whenever I see claims about disease X or some new bird flu, I immediately know that they're trying to use this for some other agenda. And to be totally honest with you, I would rather suffer the negative symptoms, impacts, side effects, outcomes of a genuine, real pandemic than suffer the outcomes and symptoms of the tyranny that will be used as a response or justified by a pandemic in response. I mean, what was the famous quote? Was it Jefferson that said, I would rather afford the inconveniences of too much liberty than too small a degree of it? That's the way I feel about these pandemics now. Frankly, I'd rather die of influenza than have to deal with more lockdowns and businesses getting shut down and the printing of 40% of all dollars ever printed within a short period of time that totally amounts to radical, massive hyperinflation increasing the gap between the wealthy and the poor in this country, just so they can use that gap as an excuse to combat or argue against capitalism, when we know this isn't capitalism at all. It's fascism. They call it crony capitalism. It's not even crony capitalism. It's just fascism. That's what fascism is. Fascism is crony capitalism, the same thing. But they don't want to call it fascism because they are fascists. They want to call it crony capitalism because capitalism is an American ideal, and so they come after it. But this particular story is next level in terms of shocking, because now they're not only claiming that there's this dangerous flu coming about, but they're claiming that it's associated specifically with cows, after we've seen time and time again from the likes of the World Economic Forum and other globalist institutions or climate change activists, this call to stop eating beef because of cattle's negative impact on our environment. We've seen the likes of Bill Gates buy up thousands upon thousands of acres of farmland in the United States. We've seen the CCP buy up thousands upon thousands of acres of farmland in the United States. And there's been a push for basically several years now, if not longer than that, to eradicate cattle. I mean, remember the Impossible Burger, which supposedly went out of business? It was a burger that wasn't really a burger. They were trying to get everybody to eat that. Now they're trying to get everybody to eat the bugs. I know we meme that Klaus Schwab explicitly said that. He didn't explicitly say you will eat the bugs, but his World Economic Forum has been advocating for alternative forms of protein. You know who really eats bugs? Grasshoppers and crickets and cockroaches? Poor people in North Korea under communist rule have to resort to eating insects because they are so starved by their regime. This is well documented, well reported. There are survivors who have escaped North Korea that have complained about needing to eat insects in order to survive as children. And now they're advocating that we should do it because we care so much about the climate. All of this in the context of reports now that Joe Biden wants to declare a national emergency in the name of climate change. All that in the context of the lies and lies and lies that we've been told by climate change advocates for 50 years at least. I mean, how many predictions from Al Gore's documentary, An Inconvenient Truth, actually came true? I think Alex Jones, just a couple of weeks ago, if not last week, maybe even this week, showed a clip of sea levels over the course of the last 30 or 40 years on a particular coastline, totally unchanged. There's a time-lapse video from a satellite image of these sea levels just staying the same ever since the 80s. They've measured it. There's been no increase or rise in sea levels on that particular coast. And you just have to look at the market to really understand it. Why is it that properties on the coast, whether in the Gulf or in Florida or in California, why is it that properties still go for billions and billions of dollars and they can still get insured and they can still get approved for 30-year mortgages if the sea level is supposed to wipe out all of those properties in the next 10, 20, or 30 years? No bank or investor or mortgage company or insurer would ever allow the purchase of property on the coast if they actually believe that the sea level was going to rise. So all the indications show that regardless of whether there is any truth at all to climate change, especially any truth at all to climate change being impacted by human beings, it is being drastically exaggerated by the institutions of our government, by these NGOs, by these for-profit green energy companies, because they are trying to grift taxpayer dollars like Ukraine or something from the federal government for their green energy initiatives. There is way too much money behind this green energy industry for us to believe anything that they say. And the real shame of it is that there may actually be some truth to humans negatively impacting the environment. There may be some small truth to that, some correctable truth, some things that we could be doing better that wouldn't be a violation of our rights as capitalists or the free market or a violation of our rights as Americans. But now there's no reason for us to believe anything that they say at all because they have lied so drastically about all of these details. I mean, even in this article, we dive in. For only the second time in the U.S. and the first time in Texas, a human was infected with bird flu, according to this article. According to the Texas Department of Health and Human Services on April 1st, April Fool's Day, the patient became ill following contact with dairy cows presumed to be infected with avian influenza. The patient's primary symptom was conjunctivitis, the HHS alert said. The FDA is using its findings to discourage the consumption of raw milk. They want you only using their state-approved milk. We know that the agriculture lobby is incredibly powerful here in the United States. We know that there's a reason that after World War II, suddenly all of our farmers were producing corn to be transferred into ethanol or high fructose corn syrup. And they started putting high fructose corn syrup in all of our food instead of pure cane sugar, which has caused diabetes and obesity to an excessive rate. We know that the food pyramid is basically a lie. And so what's happening here is everyone's figuring out that raw milk is actually better for you. It tastes amazing. It tastes like melted ice cream. First time I ever had raw milk was just months ago here in the InfoWars studio. Some friends brought it around and I tasted it and I could not believe how delicious it was. My wife won't even let me bring it home because she's worried that it's going to cause salmonella or something for the kids. I try to convince her, I try to argue with her about it, but she's just brainwashed by this narrative here. And so what we have is an agriculture lobby trying to inhibit the growth of the raw milk market as people wake up. And on top of that, we have the green energy people all over this because they want the eradication of all cows in the country in the name of clean energy or improving the climate. And the globalists love this because it gives them an excuse to enact their manufactured food shortage, their manufactured food crisis, their manufactured orchestrated famine. And they're looking at the Great Leap Forward between 1958 and 1962, where estimates range from 50 to 100 million Chinese people died of starvation. And they blame it on natural famine and natural disasters. But we know that the members of the Chinese Communist Party were too scared to accurately report the yields of the crops in their districts to their higher-ups in the Communist Party. So they lied, and by the time it was figured out that the yields weren't really the yields, it was too late. And for years, tens of millions of people starved to death in China. And despite the fact that everyone living in China today knows or is directly related to somebody who died of starvation between 1958 and 1962 in China, there is still a cult of personality around Chairman Mao. He is still determined to be some sort of hero of these people. And so the globalists look at that and they say, look, if Mao can get away with screwing up that much, dropping the ball that much, causing the deaths of up to 100 million people, like I said, estimates range, 100 million is the top, at least 50 million people of starvation in China, then why can't we do the same and get away with it? Especially if we say that these shortages of food are going to be a result of climate change for years and years in advance. This is prescriptive programming. It's not just predictive programming. It is prescriptive programming, as Klaus Schwab recently said, where we don't even predict what's going to happen in our media, in our art, in our entertainment, but we can actually prescribe what's going to happen. We can make the future what we want it to be with the content we put out, everything from Civil War or Barbie to articles like this. So then when all the cows die or disappear, they can say, oh, it was because of this flu, a flu which was probably created by the government. And we're going to get more into it on the other side because there is this ex-Joe Biden stenographer, CIA collaborated with China to release COVID-19. We're going to show some clips of this in a moment. And frankly, we have time to run clip number three here. Let's run clip three. This is late Justice Antonin Scalia predicting the weaponization of government against American citizens and the end of the Bill of Rights. This is exactly what we're talking about right now today. Let's run clip number three.
I think it's even a little more fundamental than the one that Stephen has just put forward. I asked them, what do you think is the reason that America is such a free country? What is it in our Constitution that makes us what we are? And I guarantee you that the response I will get, and you will get this from almost any American, including the woman that he was talking to at the supermarket, the answer would be freedom of speech, freedom of the press, no unreasonable searches and seizures, no quartering of troops in hope, those marvelous provisions of the Bill of Rights. But then I tell them, if you think that a Bill of Rights is what sets us apart, you're crazy. Every banana republic in the world has a Bill of Rights. Every president for life has a Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights of the former evil empire, the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, was much better than ours. I mean it literally. It was much better. We guarantee freedom of speech and of the press. Big deal. They guaranteed freedom of speech, of the press, of street demonstrations and protests. And anyone who is caught trying to suppress criticism of the government will be called to account. Whoa, that is wonderful stuff. Of course. Just words on paper. What our framers would have called a parchment guarantee. And the reason is that the real constitution of the Soviet Union, you think of the word constitution, it doesn't mean a bill, it means structure. Say a person has a sound constitution, has a sound structure. The real constitution of the Soviet Union, which is what our framers debated that whole summer in Philadelphia in 1787, they didn't talk about the Bill of Rights. That was an afterthought, wasn't it? That constitution of the Soviet Union did not prevent the centralization of power in one person or in one party. And when that happens, the game is over. The Bill of Rights is just what our framers would call a parchment guarantee.
All right, folks. So we're about ready to go to a short break, and I'm going to dive more into this. There's so much news around this agenda. But before we do, I want to talk to you a little bit about Next Level Foundational Energy. Now, you can find this product at drjonesnaturals.com. Again, that's drjonesnaturals.com. That's drjonesnaturals.com. Not all the way spelled out, just the abbreviation of doctor. Now, Next Level Foundational Energy elevates your energy levels. We typically think of things like Adderall or coffee or energy drinks, these stimulants as the source of energy in our lives and our daily routine and our consumption. But the thing that's really intriguing and amazing about this product is that it's not a stimulant in the same way that those are. It doesn't have the crash that those have. This is the natural flushing out of your cells and the empowerment of your mitochondria, which is the powerhouse of your cells. This will give you next level foundational energy in a way that you won't crash. And now it's more important than ever that you buy products like this at drjonesnaturals.com, because freedom of speech is under attack. InfoWars is under attack. Alex Jones is under attack, and his family is under attack by the deep state. We've known this for years. It was proven just weeks ago with that CIA leak. So visit drjonesnaturals.com and check out next level foundational energy. It's got the essential vitamins you need, and you can say goodbye to energy crashes and welcome sustained vitality throughout the day, because this is that foundational energy you need. It's not just tricking your brain into thinking that you have energy. It's actually providing foundational energy that simply will not go away. Be the reason that we are still on the air, and visit drjonesnaturals.com. More news on the other side. Alex called me this morning and undergoing an emergency family issue. Dealing with that. And so he'll be back in studio as soon as possible, but he asked me to cover for him. We do have the great Harrison Smith, our host from the American Journal on the morning show, coming in at the top of the hour. And then an hour later, we have the great Owen Schroyer coming in as well. So this is going to be a medley, a wild card, the A-team of InfoWars here throughout the show today. Now, I was able to touch on this story a little bit at the end of the last segment. I want to dive in here. Ex-Joe Biden stenographer, CIA collaborated with China to release COVID-19. We're going to run clip number 19 here in a moment. Mike McCormick, a whistleblower who used to be Joe Biden's stenographer, joined the Benny Johnson Show, the Benny Show, this week for a wide-ranging discussion. A viral moment from the interview came when McCormick claimed the CIA worked alongside the Chinese military to intentionally release COVID-19 into the world. Let's go ahead and see this clip.
So what's the fix here? Because it seems like the fix is what Donald Trump was heading towards, right? Which was, you should investigate these people. Like, yeah. Somebody should investigate these people. Victor Shokin has gone on Fox News and said, Joe Biden got me fired because I was looking into the corruption of his family. And if you have any hope, and I'm not trying to blackpill here, but the more you see that the Bidens are effectively cutouts for the CIA and the intel agencies, the less hope I have that any of them will ever be prosecuted meaningfully. I mean, it seems like the only way to fix something like this is sunlight as the best disinfectant.
Sunlight is the only way, you know, and I went into the oversight committee a year ago. I came out and I talked to them about what happened with Burisma, but I talked to them about what was happening with Metabiota. And in their interviews of Hunter Biden, Rob Walker, who was also on the Rosemont Sinek Technology Partners group, they never investigated. They don't even want to mention Metabiota. They talk about the you know, funny money transfers. They talk about Burisma.
I was blocked by the CEO of Metabiota, by the way, for calling them out.
That's an impeachable offense. But this Metabiota stuff is dark and dirty, and it's very serious. It goes all the way into the Wuhan Institute of Technology and that virus, the pandemic, the fake pandemic. And that's the CIA, in my opinion, was behind it. Avril Haines came into the White House in 2014 in November after they set up this research alliance with China, this, you know, infectious disease. As Ron Klain was there, she was there. She's now the person who's in charge, and she stayed there with the NSC for 2 years. She was a senior. She came from the CIA into the NSC, worked with Obama closely as one of his top security aides, and she was there at the meetings in 2017 that happened in January, right before Donald Trump came in, where they reinstated gain of function. They said, oh, it's okay, we'll redo it. And the people that were in those meetings was Fauci, Klain, Avril Haines, and Avril Haines is now in charge of investigating what happened in Wuhan. And of course, she doesn't see anything wrong that happened in Wuhan. They can't really tell what happened in Wuhan. She's a person that has to be named. The CIA operative that's named in the laptop email is a woman named Tara O'Toole. Tara O'Toole has never been called in for investigation. These are the people that the sunlight needs to hit. Tara O'Toole, Avril Haines, Fauci, and Ron Klain.
Yeah, why did Dr. Fauci go to the CIA so many times off the books? It doesn't make any sense. And Dr. Fauci's funding, of course, comes from the intelligence agencies. You can track all that back to the Patriot Act. So it's not crazy to think this. Also, a clip that I cannot get out of my head, Mike, till my dying days, I will not be able to forget that Dr. Fauci, upon Donald Trump's inauguration, so it was a day before Donald Trump's inauguration, gives a speech and he says, this next administration is going to be a surprise pandemic. Guarantee it. He says it. It clips up. We've tweeted it a million times. How can you say something with such a surety? Like, how is that possible? It's so unbelievably suspicious. It's malevolent. It's so disorienting. How evil these people are and what they're willing to do for power. And it's why I'm so glad that there are people who actually tell the truth. It's a dangerous thing to tell the truth these days. Mike McCormick is one of those people. Here's his book, once again, ladies and gentlemen, Amazon bestseller, The Case to Impeach and Imprison Joe Biden, from Joe Biden's former stenographer. Nobody would know better. Mike McCormick, God bless you and Godspeed.
Thanks, Benny. Thanks for having me on and talk about all this dirty stuff. We got to get the sunlight
so
out.
So obviously the Benny Show is a great show. They did a great job interviewing. Benny Johnson did an outstanding job interviewing Alex Jones after the revelations of the CIA's espionage and harassment of Alex Jones and InfoWars. And people don't even know what Metabiota is, who Metabiota is. Maybe you guys can throw up the clip of the CEO of Metabiota with Ghislaine Maxwell. But this is a company that Rosemont Seneca was invested in back when Joe Biden was vice president and Hunter Biden was a partner at Rosemont Seneca. I believe they were invested at least $500,000 in the company, but it's been a long time since I've looked into it, so you can take my claims with a grain of salt and double check. But while Rosemont Seneca was invested in Metabiota and while Joe Biden was vice president of the United States of America, Metabiota did receive nearly, I think it was $23.7 million in a DOD contract. So I just want to show you this clip. This was me talking about it on the Harrison's show in the morning, the American Journal. Let's run this clip and then we'll unpack it.
Joe Biden having classified documents from when he was vice president. I'm like, okay, yeah, technically that was hypocritical, but how about the fact that he laundered money through Ukraine, through Metabiota,
right?
In order to line his own pockets using DOD contracts? Or how about the fact that he basically blackmailed Ukraine into firing the prosecutor that was looking into Burisma? Or how about the fact that he took inappropriate showers with his daughter in her own handwriting in his diary? Or how about the fact that he knew his son was sexually abusing his other relative underage and he covered it up,
right?
Against Delaware law. And you could just name all the other things that he's done that have been absolutely corrupt. And it's like, but you're talking about the documents that he had? I mean, like, the worst part about the fact that he had these documents in his garage is you're not supposed to have flammable objects next to a meth lab.
Right.
We get distracted with these small hypocrisies when the greater crimes just go totally unnoticed. It's like the guy should have been in jail 10, 15 years ago.
Right.
Yeah, so they don't want you to meme or talk about that. They don't want you to unpack any of that stuff. They're just distracting you with claims of hush money being spent by Donald Trump to hide affairs that he may or may not have had with Stormy Daniels. They're distracting you with all these other small details. And despite their hypocrisy, it is overwhelmingly obvious that this family is a crime family, abundantly corrupt. And I know that virtually all politicians, we know at least 3/4 of politicians in Congress now are absolutely corrupt. 75% of them voting to fund Ukraine, for example. But this level of corruption seems to me unprecedented. And we have a federal government that is more powerful than it has ever been before. We have an executive branch in the United States of America that is more powerful than it has ever been before. So every time there is an ounce of corruption, it is felt like a pound on the people because of the disproportionate amount of power that this federal government has. If this government was powerless, then who would care about its corruption? Its corruption wouldn't have that much of a reach or that much impact. But now, similar to the downfall of Rome, we feel the virtues and vices of our leaders in radical ways compared to how we should. It used to be the case that when Franklin Pierce was the 14th president of the United States, he was a bad president, but it didn't really matter because the federal government was so small and weak relative to what it is now. Now we feel this corruption as a people, and it's unprecedented and unsustainable. And similar to how Rome had Marcus Aurelius, who was an incredible Caesar of Rome for many, many years, it's not sustainable that you have a government so powerful because you can't just rely on there always being a good person at the helm. So when Trump was president, things were going really well. The executive branch was very powerful. They were going well for the first 3 years of his term. Now, when Biden's president, the executive branch is way too powerful and they're running him like a puppet, and we're feeling the pain of that corruption. Why is it that there is no accountability for the obvious money laundering and schemes and corruption when millions of dollars are going to companies like Metabiota while the vice president's son is invested and these dollars are coming from our taxes and then there's kickback to the vice president? I mean, this is some evil stuff, folks. More news on the other side. In just a few minutes, Harrison Smith is going to be joining us in studio. Stay with us for 30 minutes or an hour. I'm not sure which yet. And there's a couple other things I want to get into. So Jones posted the other day on X, around the world, tyrants are running scared. This is a story from Mario Knoffel. Australian Prime Minister Albanese claims memes are misinformation. Let's dive into this clip and unpack it. This is clip 7.
Media platforms have a responsibility to make sure that misinformation isn't got out there. I noticed today, for example, on the way up here, they've removed various sites that were up containing fake images of myself superimposed on other people. That's the sort of thing that is going on social media. Social media has a responsibility to do the right thing here.
Did you catch up with Premier Daniel?
Media companies, including social media companies, have a responsibility to act. It shouldn't need the eSafety Commissioner to intervene, to take down violent videos. The social media companies that make a lot of money out of their business have a social responsibility. We are prepared to take whatever action is necessary to hold these companies into line.
So, obviously they don't care about freedom of speech. I've been in countless debates with people from London or Australia online, even way back before I was anybody in the political conversation, on Facebook of all places. When debates used to happen on Facebook, when there was freedom of speech there, gosh, now 10 years ago or longer. And we are mocked by the international community, not only for our Second Amendment rights, but also for our First Amendment rights. I mean, there's a famous clip that we've shown you time and time again on this network of Alex Jones arguing with Piers Morgan, saying that 1776 will commence again if you try to take our guns. And Piers Morgan is not the only person overseas that harbors those sentiments. He's not the only person overseas who is antagonistic toward things like the right to bear arms or freedom of speech. It's something fairly unique to the United States of America. Frankly, I would even say it's a radical political idea that we even protect rights like freedom of speech, freedom of the press, and the right to bear arms in this country. Our founding fathers were radicals. They were extremists. They were radical patriots. And this radical idea, this great experiment that came out of these radical ideas, is the reason that the United States rose to global prominence so quickly over the course of just a couple of centuries and seemingly eradicated most of its own vices of its own accord without the necessity of external force in those same centuries. And now we are collapsing in direct correlation to how we abandon these principles that are determined or deemed radical by the international community, by the globalist community. And so we see this antagonism from Australia's prime ministers. Now, this is the same Australia where people were literally escaping quarantine camps and then being arrested during the pandemic. The same Australia which bought up everybody's guns after some fluke shooting in the 90s, but then wants to silence everybody about a stabbing in a church from an extremist Muslim. And this censorship is not just a sentiment that is harbored by Australia or the European Union or the globalists overseas, but it is a sentiment which exists among our own politicians. We hear the likes of Joe Biden. Remember when they tried to start that censorship committee and then it backfired and they had to change its name and fire that lady who was singing those musical songs, who was obviously a lunatic. She was like Professor Umbridge. It was coined the Ministry of Truth when it came out that this committee or this department was being formed to manage content on social media and make censorship recommendations. And we see that our own intelligence community has come in with the Twitter files and others. Mark Zuckerberg himself admitting that the CIA explicitly called him to silence the Hunter Biden laptop story during the last election cycle. And he was talking about it as if it wasn't something to be ashamed of that he gave him. This was right on Joe Rogan. We saw them call in Zuckerberg to speak before committees immediately after the election in 2016 because Cambridge Analytica was deemed to be some huge Steve Bannon-backed coup or scandal in cahoots with Russia somehow to steal data. But now we have McConnell coming out saying Tucker Carlson and Trump over Ukraine stance is bad after the Senate passes this $95 billion aid bill. So this is McConnell sniping Tucker Carlson and Trump over their stance on sending $95 billion overseas while our own people suffer here in the United States. This is clip number four.
You've been probably one of the most ardent backers of Ukraine in the Senate here, but what took so long to get some of these other eight Republicans persuaded to your position here? Was it the overall nature of this bill and what was lost in that time period for Ukraine?
Well, that's a good question. You already know the answer. I think the demonization of Ukraine began by Tucker Carlson.
Please.
Who, in my opinion, ended up where he should have been all along, which is Nazis. Interviewing Vladimir Putin. And so he had an enormous audience, which convinced a lot of rank-and-file Republicans that maybe this was a mistake. I think the former president had sort of mixed views on it. We all felt that border was a complete disaster, myself included. And Chad, you remember covering the phases we went through. First, there was an effort to make law, which requires you to deal with Democrats. And then a number of our members thought it wasn't good enough. And then our nominee for president didn't seem to want us to do anything at all. That took months to work our way through it. So we ended up doing the supplemental that was originally proposed, which dealt with not all problems. It didn't solve the border problem, but certainly addressed the growing threats at the moment.
You know, I'm a big fan of a podcaster and author and consultant named Jocko Willink. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him. He came to prominence after his appearance on the Tim Ferriss Show, which is a business-centered podcast. And then later, I believe he was on Joe Rogan, and later he was one of the first guests, if not the first guest, on Candace Owens' show when she was at the Daily Wire. This is somebody who wrote a book called Extreme Ownership. This is somebody who had experience in combat in Ramadi in a leadership position. And the whole premise of his book is Just that, extreme ownership. No matter whose fault it is at your business when something is done wrong, you always have to psychologically adopt the mentality that it's your fault if you want to be a good leader. And he consults businesses on this. So if the crew messes up something, it's my fault because I didn't get them the clip and communicate better what they needed, right? That's just an example. The crew hasn't made a single mistake this whole entire show. I mean, it's the best crew in the world, frankly. It always has been and always will be the best crew, I think, in media. But that's just an example. So if there's a mistake at work, even if it's technically somebody else's fault, you have to take ownership of that mistake because that's how businesses improve. That's how culture improves. And that's how you build trust as a leader. When you always take ownership, they know that they don't have to fear you. They'll report accurately to you. They'll tell you the truth about problems that are going on, and then you can handle it. And what we just saw from McConnell up there is Mitch McConnell blaming Tucker Carlson, a member of the press, for all of the struggles that he faces as a Republican leader, for all the issues that Ukraine faced getting funding from the United States without taking any ownership for his own lack of leadership, without Zelensky taking any ownership for the Nazi problem that Ukraine clearly has. This is June 12, 2015. Ukraine's neo-Nazis won't get U.S. money from Bloomberg. They've had a Nazi problem for at least 10 years, basically ever since the Civil War broke out. And he's blaming Tucker Carlson for being responsible for a lack of support among Americans for Ukraine in this $95 billion deal. Maybe it's their Nazi problem. Maybe it's the fact that many of us are directly descended from those who fought the Nazis. I think Alex Jones has a grandfather who fought in World War II. I could be mistaken about that. My grandfather fought in World War II. Donald Geiser was in the Navy. Many of us are directly related to an entire generation of Americans who heroically fought against Nazis. That's the reason that we aren't inclined to give $95 billion, or I guess it was 60 of the 95, straight to these Nazi sympathizing leaders. Now, we're going to come up on break. We're going to unpack that more on the other side. We do have Harrison Smith joining us. In the meantime, I do want to remind the audience to check out Vitamin Mineral Fusion at InfoWarsStore.com. It is 40% off, and it has a unique delivery system. Obviously, there are a million different ways that you can get multivitamins. You can buy gummies. You can buy generic brand stuff. You can buy name brand stuff at the grocery store. But this unique delivery system is designed to maximize the effects and give your body the tools it needs to support its natural functions. So Vitamin Mineral Fusion is the best way to get all the vitamins and minerals that your body needs and ensure that your body is able to absorb them. But not only that, folks, it's not only the best vitamin conglomeration for your body, but it keeps InfoWars on the air. So go to InfoWarsStore.com. Be the reason that we're on the air in this pivotal, imperative time in our country's history.
I have to say, your willingness to platform or to have a conversation with Alex Jones, I think, was a revolutionary act, actually. Not that everything Alex Jones says is right. It's not. Not everything I say is right or anyone says is right. But Alex Jones is an interesting person. And even if he's not interesting, he has been walled off from the rest of us.
Yeah.
Through name calling. And your willingness to be like, no, actually, we're just going to listen to Alex Jones and you can decide for yourself.
Well, Alex has been my friend for more than 20 years.
Well, yeah, but I'm sure you have other friends you haven't invited. And just like,
right.
You were not allowed to talk to him. And when you hear Alex Jones talk, you definitely understand why they told you you couldn't listen to Alex Jones.
Well, that's one of the reasons why I had him as one of the first guests when I came over to Spotify.
Love that.
I was like, let's go.
What did they say?
Well, a lot of people weren't happy. We lost sponsors. It was an issue. But I think it did the job. And one of the reasons why he's gone through some issues is because that guy is uncovering real shit that's terrifying every fucking day. When you see so many lies and so much propaganda and so many psyops that are being done on people, you start seeing them where they don't exist. And that's what he did.
Well, and he's also channeling some stuff. You can't call 9/11 in detail because you're super informed.
The fact.
He called it.
Yes.
He literally called it in the summer of 2001. He said, planes will fly into the World Trade Centers, and they will blame a man called Osama bin Laden.
We know the government's planning terrorism. We know Oklahoma City and World Trade Center was terrorism. We know the Joint Chiefs of Staff wanted to blow up airliners. If you do it, we're going to blame you because we know who's up to it. Or if you let some terrorist group do it, like the World Trade Center, we know who to blame. If any terrorism comes, it's from this government. And if there was an outside threat like a bin Laden, who was a known CIA asset in the 80s running the Mujahideen war and whose family builds all the military bases over in Saudi Arabia right now and sits on the board of Iridium Satellite, he's the boogeyman they need in this Orwellian phony system.
We know that he said that because he said it on tape.
Yeah.
Multiple times. And then he said, call the White House and tell them this.
Now I'm going to put the call out that you call the White House and tell them, look, we've seen the news stories that you've wanted to blow things up, that you have blown things up, and that we're aware of who the terrorists are if you pull this. This can stop this Hitlerian Reichstag event.
He's channeling something.
You think
That's
so?
Super. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
There's like no other. I mean, tell me how he did it otherwise. I've asked him about it. How did you do that? At length, he had dinner in my barn recently. We were talking about this. How'd you do that? I don't know. It just came to me. And that's real. What you see, and that's not a new phenomenon. It's happened throughout history. There are people called prophets. And there are people who were prophets who weren't called prophets. But there are people who have information or parts of information, bits of information, visions of information come to them. And then they relay it. It's not from them. They received it. This is like the, you know, one of the oldest phenomena in human history. So those people tend to be a little crazy, a little imbalanced, a little different from everybody else. Do you know what I mean? They live on locusts and honey in the wilderness. I mean, that's just like they're not like everybody else. And that's clearly part of what I'm not saying that everything that Alex Jones says is a prophecy from God. It's not. But that was prophetic. And if it wasn't, tell me how it wasn't. In July of 2000, like I lived in Washington in July of 2001, you know, my dad worked in the government. Like I was as well informed as anybody could be about what was going on in the government. I've always been interested in what's happening in other countries. I was aware of Osama bin Laden. I knew about the Taliban. I knew, you know, more than most people. There's not one person who was saying, not one person in Washington, D.C. was saying, you know, at some point soon, they may fly airplanes into the World Trade Centers and blame Osama bin Laden. Like that just wasn't a thing. So if you said that multiple times on camera, there's a reason. I've said this to 50 people, what I just said to you, and they all look at me like, yeah, that's stupid. Tell me how it's stupid. Like, tell me how he did that. Like, that's impossible, actually.
He didn't just do it with that either.
No, I'm aware.
He's done it with a lot of things.
Today, in 2002, there is a tyrannical organization calling itself the New World Order, pushing for worldwide government, a cashless society, open borders, total and complete tyranny.
A Rockefeller study envisions future dictatorship controlled by elite, millions being killed, mandatory quarantines, checkpoints, and the forced vaccines, and the hell we're already living in that's just going to continue to intensify until we take our governments back. You're not going to be able to go to the ball games anymore. You're not going to be able to just go out and get drunk with your friends. You're not going to be able to just...
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show, folks. I have the great Harrison Smith, whom I owe my life, in studio today. And we're going to talk about so much. We're going to talk about breaking news. We're going to debrief a little bit on the debate yesterday regarding the flat Earth. It was really iconic, historical. But we were showing that awesome compilation that the great Darren McBreen put together for the first 5 minutes of this hour. And a lot of critics of Alex Jones come out and say, well, William Cooper actually predicted that they were going to blame a terrorist attack on Osama bin Laden a month before that. And they're always saying that Alex Jones ripped off William Cooper. But thanks to some of the recent developments in technology here at InfoWars, we were able to find the earliest recorded mention of the trade centers that we could find all the way back to 2001. I basically searched the phrase trade center for every time that it came up on air by Alex Jones in 2001. And the first time he mentioned it was March 6th, 2001. I want to run this clip just to prove that he did not steal his prediction of 9/11 from William Cooper. He actually predicted it before William Cooper did on March 6th. Let's run this short clip here.
2001, Alex Jones first predicted the September 11th attack on the World Trade Center.
You've got an element of the FBI and these war game scenarios where they can remote control a 747 and they're going to crash it into the World Trade Center.
While other networks lie to you about what's happening now, InfoWars tells you the truth about what's happening next. Visit InfoWars.com/show and share the link today.
Harrison, you've been working with Alex Jones for a number of years now, at least 5 years, right?
More like seven, I think, yeah.
Wow, 7 years.
I know.
You've been working for Alex Jones longer than I've been married to my wife.
That's
you guys celebrate your anniversary?
We
you
should.
Know what your first day was?
Be in February. It was February 2017. So it was right after Trump got inaugurated. I thought, this is it. Time to get involved.
Now, what do you think? Obviously, I watched that clip of Tucker Carlson talking about Alex Jones with Joe Rogan for the first time next to Alex in the office back there. And it was both our first times watching. And apparently Tucker had texted Alex and said, hey, I say some nice things about you at 2 hours and 10 minutes in. So we watched it together. And I said, oh, the title of the clip has to be Tucker Carlson says Alex Jones is a prophet. And he's all humble about it. Oh, no, don't put that, you know, because he's really sensitive about being glorified as divine. He doesn't want to be a cult leader. He's repeatedly like, I don't want people to worship, you know. He's very humble about it and does not want to go down that road.
Yeah.
But he really has been prophetic. And I don't know if it's reason or divine inspiration. I think that he just was one of the only people looking at all the pieces of the puzzle before it was really easy to find all the pieces. He was actually going to libraries, reading documents, very well read in history. And when you have, the more pieces you have, the higher resolution of an image you can get for what the plan is and what's going to happen. What are your thoughts, having worked for him for 7 years now, as far as his process is concerned and his ability to repeatedly predict things years in advance?
Yeah, well, that was sort of the theme of the show this morning, American Journal. It was just all of these stories and sort of each one related to predictions that had been made about where the New World Order was going and where it's taking us and how they're doing it. And the fact is that it's already here. Alex has been predicting this stuff for 30 years in like a week at this point. And it's all come to fruition. I mean, it's not a matter of if we are going to have global government. Global government exists. It's called the World Economic Forum. That's one form of it. But you have billionaires and world elite and world leaders coming together in a Congress, meeting together, setting policy, and then dispersing to their various, you know, positions of power in nation states, and then implementing the policy that's decided on. That is, for all intents and purposes, a government. Just because it's not voted on, well, it's not a democratic government, but none of our governments are democratic at this point. So we already are in the global governance paradigm. AI is probably already making major decisions worldwide. A lot of their policies are already being dictated by AI. People think AI is a threat that's coming. AI is already here. We had a caller who talked about the Aladdin AI that BlackRock uses to determine financial policy. So whether it's AI or global governance or, you know, medical tyranny, any of these things that Alex Jones has been warning about for 30 years, they're already implemented. These aren't warnings anymore. These aren't, you know, prognostications for what comes ahead. This is just reality at this point. So you should have listened before. But yeah, I think the reason, you know, Alex doesn't want to be treated as a prophet or doesn't want to be called a prophet or anything like that, because that sort of implies that you have to have some supernatural ability to do this. I think it is just a matter of logic. I think it's a matter of both logic and skepticism, right? You take a look at where things are going, you simply plot out the trajectory in your head without any intervention. Here's where we're going to end up. And so that's logic. And then the skepticism part, it's almost worse than skepticism. Cynicism might be a better word, because sure. I feel like I'm able to predict things fairly accurately by just thinking, okay, what if, just let's put ourselves in the mindset of what if the world is run by a cabal of psychopath criminals? What would they do? And that turns out to be what actually happened. So as long as you recognize both what's going on, the things that are hidden from you, you discover them, you uncover, you know, the real truth behind the headlines, and you put that into a paradigm where you understand that the people that are running the world, let alone our country, are psychopathic, anti-human, murderous criminals. And you can actually predict the future pretty accurately, it seems.
You know, I was in a X space a couple of weeks ago with Adrian Dittman. Adrian Dittman, of course, being the man that Alex Jones famously repeatedly says is not Elon Musk.
Right.
Because he sounds exactly like Elon Musk.
He seems an awful lot like Elon.
Yeah, and he's fascinating regardless of what the details are. But we were talking a little bit about InfoWars versus other mainstream media outlets. And obviously with other mainstream media outlets, whether it's Fox or MSNBC, whether it's right wing or left wing, there is a completely different approach to news. At those other mainstream networks, you have a producer barking in your ear the whole time, and you have an editor, and you have top-down directives of talking points, right? And so what you see, whether it's Megyn Kelly or Rachel Maddow or others, are a litany of valedictorian types in front of the camera who are very good at following instructions. These are the type of people that would have been straight-A students. They're very articulate. They're well-read. They can write well. They can speak well. And they can follow instructions. And they can cover the news according to whatever their producer says or the top-down says. And they're great at what they do. They're professionals in their own right. I would not be very good at CNN or MSNBC. Even if I tried my best, just because the nature of it is it's counterintuitive to me. So this is more of an entrepreneurial bootstrap approach to news. And Adrian was mentioning, it was either Adrian or Ian Miles Strong was mentioning, how do you go for 3 hours without a teleprompter, without preparing? And I said, because there's no script, it's based on an algorithm. So this actually becomes very easy to do after you understand the algorithm. So the assumption is that there is an effort to conglomerate all world power and that all of our political leaders are conspiring together in order to conglomerate that power in a globalist way. And so all you have to do is run the different news stories of the day through the algorithm and you can talk about it and it comes off accurate because it is. And it's interesting because it is. That's the difference between InfoWars and these other networks, in my opinion, is that we're operating under this formula that we understand, that we believe in. We believe in the algorithm, whereas these other networks, in my opinion, are just doing whatever the top-down intelligence community is forcing the networks to do. What do you think about that perspective on InfoWars?
Yeah, I think that's interesting because what you're doing is working backwards. You know where we're headed. We're headed for global governance. We're headed for unelected, technocratic, bureaucratic prison planet. And you work backwards from there and just look at how all of this stuff is leading us towards that. And obviously, if you start with that assumption, you find it confirmed over and over again. But I think more importantly, what the mainstream media's ultimate task is to tell the truth, you know, the facts. They have to deliver the facts. That's, you know, incumbent on them upholding themselves as journalistic, incredibly journalistic. So they have to tell you the truth, but they want to leave you believing a lie. So I was going through a New York Times article today where, you know, everybody knows at this point, everybody recognizes that Donald Trump was spied on in 2016. It's not even a debate. It's not even it's not speculation whatsoever. But when they present it, they have to present it as Trump's claims that he believes that the deep state spied on his campaign in 2016. And so, yeah, technically that's a fact, right? You'd pass a lie detector test. Yes, Trump believed that the spy agencies did that, but it's because they did. But they can't report it like that. They have to report it in a way that insinuates this is a crazy idea that Trump came up with no bearing on fact. So the mainstream media's job is to tell the truth, but leave you believing a lie. And importantly, they do a very good job of separating stories from one another, because that's what I think the main difference between InfoWars and everybody else is.
They tell isolated stories.
Exactly. They treat everything as isolated, and they want you to think, I mean, even just looking at, you know, headlines we have here now, if you treat the housing crisis where people can't afford houses anymore as distinct and separate and an economic issue, and then you compare that with the lowering birth rates, and if you think these things have nothing to do with each other, then you're going to not really be able to come up with an answer for either. But if you understand that both of these are just different aspects of the same push towards globalism, the anti-human, dehumanization, the getting rid of the middle class because they're the ones that stand up against malfeasance in the government, when you understand these seemingly disparate stories as, in fact, just different facets of the same item that you're looking at, which is the push for globalism, then it becomes easier to understand. But of course, if you aren't tuned into that, it does make InfoWars sound crazy because we're jumping from one story to another, and these people are presented these stories as if they're separate, and suddenly we're jumping from one to the other. Right. It can be disorienting and baffling, but the reality is all of these things are intricately intertwined and share, you know, a lot of similarities with one another in the way that they're implemented, the way that they're talked about, the way that they're carried out, and the effect that they have on humanity itself. So I think that's the main difference. We actually connect these dots rather than just show you the dots as disseparate, sort of unconfrontable problems, right?
Yeah.
That's the thing. When you have all these things as singular items, singular issues, you're never going to get to the heart of the problem. So it's like treating a variety of different symptoms, but never actually getting to the cancer that's causing all of the symptoms. So I think that's a big difference between InfoWars and mainstream.
Well, as you were talking, it made me think of just this as an example. I know we covered the Australian Prime Minister claiming that memes are misinformation. We covered Mitch McConnell coming out and saying that the reason people don't support Ukraine is because of Tucker Carlson. And now I want to show you this clip. This is clip number, I believe, 25. It's 40 seconds long or so, of Roseanne Barr triggering libs in hilarious video mocking Trump accuser E. Jean Carroll. Now, these are all three connected. So you have somebody coming out saying memes are misinformation. You have Mitch McConnell coming out saying that a member of the press is responsible for our national security threat of almost not being able to fund Ukraine. And then you have this canceled comedian, formerly canceled comedian, triggering all the libs online. I mean, this is the type of stuff that they want to silence. Let's go ahead and run the clip and unpack it.
What happened, Mom? We're at Bergdorf. Are you okay? You look very sick.
No, I'm not okay because I just had a horrible flashback, a horrible memory. Right now, I realize that 26 years ago, Joe Biden raped me right here in that dressing room in the shoe department where I went in to change my shoes.
Oh, my God.
He raped me in here.
She blocked it.
Joe Biden. He raped me right here. It's in the shoe department at Bergdorf Goodman.
Are you okay?
No, I'm not. I need to sue.
So obviously she's making fun of E. Jean Carroll. But the backlash that she's faced, it ties into these three completely separate stories from all over the world. One in Australia, one in our own leadership here in the United States, obviously one just in the social media culture warfare. They do tie into one narrative, but the media would never report those three things at all, really. But they would never report them as part of a larger agenda or story.
Yeah, and I think one of the best examples is because, you know, censorship is sort of the way they get away with everything. So in order to understand the entire paradigm, like what we're up against, you have to understand how all of these things support one another. I mean, it is an info war, and these are all various divisions and armies, but they're all, you know, supporting each other in the same mission. So, you know, if you look at like the destruction of Europe under, you know, with the immigration that's being caused, well, it's like the wars that America started probably at the behest of Israel, that started the migrant crisis, which then caused the crime rate to skyrocket and has destroyed the economies of Europe. But you can't report on that because it's racism. So now they have to put in, you know, free speech or, you know, speech limiting laws in order to stop people from noticing that it's the migrants that are committing all the crimes. And then, you know, once you get that ball rolling, once you get your foot in the door when it comes to censorship, and suddenly you're censoring political parties and you're able to institute a despotism by getting rid of dissident parties, by claiming that they're violating some of the things that you set up before. So like all of these things bleed into one another. And for any of it to exist, censorship is like the top of the list, because you can get away with anything if nobody can talk about it.
Right.
So you know, you have all these disseparate things going on, seemingly disseparate, but in reality, they're intricately intertwined and all covered by the censorship, because you can't speak out against what's going on, because then maybe you could stop what's going on. And they like what's going on.
And we've heard this reoccurring theme. We're going to run clip 26 here in a second, folks. This reoccurring theme of the rise in right-wing extremism. And famously, Joe Biden, in one of his earliest speeches as president of the United States, claimed that domestic terrorism was the greatest threat to national security, white supremacism the greatest threat to national security, and right-wing extremism along with that. Similarly, they use the distinction between MAGA Republicans and traditional Republicans as if MAGA Republicans are a barnacle on the side of the neocon establishment. And what frustrates me so much about that, Harrison, is I am somebody who is certainly opposed to right-wing extremism. And regardless of what you think about some of the details, I think we can both agree that in the 20th century, it did go too far sometimes, right? And whether it was Mussolini or Hitler or whatever. And the problem that I have with it is they act like right-wing extremism is because of censorship misinformation or disinformation or just bigotry or hatred. They don't realize that it's their policies that create this sense of extremism. I have certainly been radicalized by the left.
Right.
And I have to cognitively, consciously check myself.
Go, hold on. We can't hate these people.
I have thoughts. I'm like, I have thoughts of firing squads and things, you know, right. And I'm like, whoa, don't lose yourself in this, right? And so this is from February 23rd, this post on Instagram. I'm going to read the caption and then we'll run the clip. Tuesday, days after hundreds of people gave a fascist salute at a rally in Rome, sparking widespread condemnation, and calls for the country's far-right leader to take action. A video circulating online shows hundreds of people making the band salute at an event Sunday commemorating the killing of three neo-fascist youths in the Italian capital in 1978. So apparently in 1978, three neo-fascists were killed, and all the fascists this year in Italy got together to commemorate the sacrifice of their countrymen, right? Right. The Acca Larentia killings, as they're known, are marked annually. The people in the video stand in at least a dozen rows, and when prompted by a voice shouting outside the frame, raise their right arm in a salute that dates to the regime of Benito Mussolini, Italy's fascist dictator. Now, they appear to shout present three times in unison in response to someone yelling for all fallen comrades. So let's go ahead and run this clip and then unpack it. There they are shouting. Now, I don't know if you're getting any audio, but they're doing the Nazi salute in unison. You can let it loop a couple times because it's a short clip. So this is something that I don't know if it's explicitly illegal in Italy. It certainly would be illegal in Germany to do this. This is in Rome.
Right.
And obviously the video says that it was yesterday, but it's not actually from yesterday. It was posted the day after it happened, but it's hundreds of them. And when I see that, I'm not thinking, oh my goodness, it's a rise in bigotry, it's a rise in right-wing extremism, it's a rise in fascism. Obviously, it is those things, but I think to myself, the policies of the globalists and the leftists all throughout the world, in the European Union and the United States, catalyze that type of event, inspire young men between 18 and 34 to go to that type of event. That's the demographic that the Nazis targeted successfully before 1933. And it's because they're allowing the invasion of their country that these fascists exist. Because fascism is the traditional response to a lack of patriotism to one's own country among their own leaders. This is the rebellion. And so that's why I push for populism so much, because I want all of the strengths of nationalism without any of the vices of it, where you blame the wrong groups or the wrong people for the ails. Like, we need to understand that the enemy is the political class. It's not the person voting for the Democrats. It's the people who believe the lies, not the people who tell the lies. It's the political class that lies to us. And so when I see that, I'm frustrated at the left, not at the right. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, we covered this today as why I went off on a little tangent about this on American Journal, again, with that same New York Times article. Because just like we see so often, they ignore the catalyst that causes the response. They only report on the response. And I associate it with, you know, what's going on with Israel, where they say, man, you know, anti-Israel sentiment has really skyrocketed ever since the October 7th Hamas attack. And so it's like, okay, if you go from the Hamas attack to a rise in anti-Semitism, yeah, that seems crazy if you ignore all the actions of Israel in the meantime. If you leave that part out of the story, it paints a very scary picture, relating that to the way that they were portraying Trump as this dangerous threat because he would be a president that was against the security agencies. And this is unprecedented. This has never happened before. And the way that they're presenting it is as if Trump just for no reason out of nowhere decided to hate the intelligence agencies. They never mentioned the fact that he was spied on, that the deep state started it, essentially.
Right. Why wouldn't you hire private intelligence after the establishment intelligence spied on your campaign just a couple months ago?
Right. So they leave out that part. They leave out the part of the deep state spying on his campaign and creating fake dossiers and launching the media attack and then launching the investigation with Robert Mueller. They leave all of that out and they go, man, this Trump guy hates the intelligence agencies. That's super dangerous. It's like, well, it's because the intelligence agencies are bad. Or just look at, you know, the way mainstream media and you know, misinformation, they will tell you that Americans don't trust the establishment anymore. They don't trust the media anymore. Why, though? They never point out the catalyst for this event. The catalyst is you lying all of the time. So obviously people aren't going to trust you. So if you leave out the original attack and only focus on the counterattack, then you can paint the counterattacker as if they're the aggressor and they're the reason right. You know, all of this is
and
bad.
This is a pretext to usher in new regulations and attacks on their political dissidents.
Right.
So folks, we've only got about a minute and a half left before we go to break. Harrison is going to join us for the rest of the hour. Make sure you tune into his show in the mornings, 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Central Time at Infowars.com/show. Obviously, everywhere that we post, make sure you follow him on X at Harrison H. Smith as well. He posts amazing content. He's an outstanding host as well. But before we go to break, I want to draw your attention to Next Level Foundational Energy. Now that you can find this product at drjonesnaturals.com. That's drjonesnaturals.com. And there's a couple of different things that it does. So first of all, it elevates your energy levels, but it doesn't act like a traditional stimulant where it gives you a buzz and the jitters and then you crash, whether you're drinking too much caffeine or you're taking Adderall or anything like that. This is the foundational energy that just makes you a more energetic person. So it doesn't trick you into thinking that you have energy. It actually makes you have more energy without needing to trick your brain. Now, it has the essential vitamins you need, but say goodbye to those crashes and welcome sustained vitality throughout the day with Next Level Foundational Energy at drjonesnaturals.com. We know that InfoWars is under attack. We know that Alex Jones is under attack, and we know that his family, including his father, has been under attack by the deep state because we tell the truth here. So by going to drjonesnaturals.com, not only can you get the foundational energy that you need to fight back against the New World Order, but you can keep InfoWars on the air and us in the fight, broadcasting truth worldwide. Stick with us, folks. More on the other side. All right, folks, this is the Alex Jones Show. I am your host today, Chase Geiser, joined by the great Harrison Smith. Now, at the end of the last segment, we were unpacking the rise in right-wing extremism throughout Europe. All that in the context of this article, Germany's youth swing to the right, anti-immigration, AfD, becomes the number one party for Germans under 30. I believe the leader of AfD, though I could be mistaken, has recently faced some legal recourse because he used the expression, quote, everything for Germany at the end of a speech a number of years ago. That's a banned expression in Germany because of its association with the SA, which was the precursor to the SS, as I understand it. I could be mistaken about that. So please forgive me, members of the audience who are up and up on their World War II history. So why is it, do you think, that this is so appealing to people between 18 and 30?
Well, because they have to live with the consequences of the decisions of the people that came before. I mean, I think AfD is a really emblematic example. It's not the only one in Europe, but I mean, this is the dichotomy of the world that we live in. AfD is both the most popular party in Germany and also under investigation by the German government, who considers them like not domestic terrorists necessarily,
yeah,
but like
almost
on the cusp of it. Yeah. So they're spied on, they're restricted, just yesterday there was a story about an arson attack against an AfD member, somebody burned down his house. So
like a Reichstag thing.
You all know, one was real, actually. But that's the strange thing about our democracy is the more popular you are, the more your government will try to restrict your actions. So obviously this is backfiring, and AfD is just becoming more and more popular the more that they restrict and demonize them. But it's really emblematic as to how our democracy functions in Europe, where the most popular party in Germany is also like on the cusp of being made illegal by the German government.
Right. Now, do you think we're going to see the same thing here in the United States? Because I'm looking at this headline, Biden's America, 40% of renters think they'll never own a home, up from 27% just last year. So that's almost a 50% right. increase. It seems to me that the way the leftists and the globalists are leading our country, they are catalyzing a generation of young Americans that will hate them.
Well, here is the problem. They are constantly playing the victim and blaming everything on capitalism. So I talked about this extensively on American Journal, talking about we're missing an opportunity here to actually explain how we got to this point, because the Republican leadership just doesn't care about these people. They just don't care. They see, because it's a big trend now on TikTok of young people going, I went to the right schools, I do everything right, I work 9 to 5, but just doing my finances, I'll never own a home. I can't even save money. I don't even have time to go out and try to start a family. And they're like literally weeping in their cars about like, I did everything right. Why is everything so hard?
Yeah.
And the Republican response to that is just like, buck up, boyo, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. And it's like, no, you don't.
Right. The political class has inflated the dollar since the 1970s. And it's the reason everybody's poor. And if you were pissed off that you have to work 3 crappy jobs instead of 1 good job to make ends meet in this country, then you should blame the leftists and the globalists and the government overspending and the AOCs and the Bidens and all the scum
right.
that vote to send billions of dollars overseas.
And nobody's actually making that argument. So you've got people that are in pain, in psychological pain because of the destruction of our system. And then you've got the communists that are saying, actually, it's capitalist fault and you have to, we all have to become communists and socialists and that'll solve everything. So even though they're policies are the things that got us to this point. And even though their ideas will only make everything worse, they're the only ones even pretending to deal with these very real issues that people are struggling under. So it's up to us, and it's incumbent on us to explain things are not worse today because we've become more capitalist. Things are not worse today because we've become more conservative or more Christian. It's the exact opposite. The more these socialist policies get implemented, the more painful it is for everybody. There is a way out of this. It's a return to what America used to be. And I always think about, there's this story, it was written by the guy who wrote The Godfather, but it's a true story of sort of a Robin Hood-esque character in Italy, in Sicily, in the mafia. But he, anyway, it's a long story, but it's very good. And you should read it. Salvatore Giuliano, I think his name was. But there's a part in this book where, you know, in Italy, just before World War II, there was all this conflict between the communists and the fascists. And the main character is saying, you know, I understand why the peasants are going to the communists. The communists actually appeal to them. They say, we will help you. We will give you. And he's saying, communism is the only structure in the world that actually, you know, promises things to these people. And then he says, you know, except America, obviously. Except America, because America back then was this place where even
right,
if you were
opportunity.
A dirt Golden poor roads. Peasant from, you know, the backwaters of Italy, you could go to America, you could achieve something, you could have something great. So we have to recapture that. We have to recapture the promise of America that says it doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter where you came from. If you work hard, if you do what's right, you will succeed. You will be rewarded. I mean, that is the promise of America. They've destroyed that. They basically claimed that promise was a lie. And so the only thing you're left with is communism. But in reality, capitalism and the American system is the thing that actually brings people out of poverty, actually gives
right.
people
And Milton Friedman purpose. Gave speech after speech and lecture after lecture at colleges and did Q&A after Q&A at colleges proving that fact, that capitalism brings more people out of poverty. I mean, all the data supports it, and he did so in such a good, succinct way. But the one thing I don't think anybody's really talking about, I'm sure people are, but everyone talks about the algorithms on either TikTok or Instagram causing our children in the public education system, causing our children to undergo these gender transition surgeries and therapies with the hormones that they take and literally being physically mutilated by the left. No one's talking about how this is going to backfire tremendously by 2028, because when these 14-year-olds become 18 and they wish they still had their genitals, or they wish that they were capable of having children, I think that there's going to be a major backlash of people that are going to be very bitter with what this leftism has done to physically mutilate them forever.
I hope so, man. The problem is that it's not just the algorithms on social media. It's coming from every direction.
Yes.
And I've talked about this on my show as well. I mean, we have friends, I've you know, people that I know, acquaintances, who and every like basically everybody I know that has a kid in public school, their kid has taken on some bizarre new trend. You know, one kid got taught in elementary school that climate change is destroying the earth and that it's her fault for eating meat. So now she's a vegetarian and her parents are just like, I don't know, we eat meat a lot, but gosh, this is her thing now. She's into this. And it's like, no, don't you understand?
They just capitulate.
Your child is being brainwashed into an anti-human agenda where, I mean, I can't even imagine telling a little kid. I mean, you know how these things, I remember being probably in second grade and hearing a teacher reference like, oh, yeah, you know, they say that in 10 years, there's going to be a big comet that might hit Earth. And like that was like I like had nightmares about that.
Yeah.
These things are terrifying. So when you tell a little kid you're destroying the Earth by eating meat, they're going to really take that seriously. And it's going to be embedded in their psyche. And maybe they can be deprogrammed eventually. But this is coming from the media. It's coming from social media and the algorithms. But it's coming from their peers. And it's coming from their teachers and the administration. So these things are being implanted at a very deep level into
yes.
people's psyches. I don't think it is something that they'll just be able to brush off when they, you know, awaken to the logic. Because it's becoming a core part of their identity that it will be incredibly hard to shake off. So whether it's becoming a vegetarian because you're told you're destroying the earth by eating meat, or becoming transgender because, you know, that's what's being pumped in from every different angle and every different, you know, input into their psyche is priming them to accept this belief. I don't know if they're going to be able to have an awakening like that, because an awakening of that level requires in a way, a weird sort of like self-denial. Like it's going to be the hardest thing to do to undo years of programming that had become a core part of your identity.
It's traumatic.
People don't need to do that easily.
Face that cognitive dissonance. 100%. Realize you've been wrong about everything.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like when you have people that have major shifts in their faith, whether for or against. You see that trauma happen, right? So when people have been atheists their entire lives and then they realize that they believe in Jesus, it's like their whole world melts down and they have this, you know, beautiful breakdown. It's great that, you know, people come to Christ. But when you indoctrinate on the deepest levels this philosophy, it becomes psychologically traumatic to overcome that. And frankly, I'm just so concerned that it's punk rock now to listen to your teachers into the establishment.
Right.
It used to be that if your teacher said it, you had to fight the machine and fight back. But now they're turning you against your own family. Folks, more on the other side. I promise we're going to get into the debrief of the Flat Earth debate yesterday with Harrison. Stick with us. We thought we were going to get into the Flat Earth debate from yesterday, the first half of the hour, and it just never happened because there's so much groundbreaking news to cover. And of course, Harrison always has such outstanding insights on everything going on in the world. So I want to use this last segment that we have together before I'm joined by Owen Schroyer to talk a little bit about the debate that you had with Whitsitt Gets It yesterday. Having spent a day since this debate, is there anything that comes to mind in retrospect? How do you feel about how it went yesterday?
You know, I'm starting to think that maybe the debate didn't even happen. I'm starting to think that something you know, magical or cosmological occurred during those 2 hours yesterday. Because I go on Twitter to try to find out what the response is, and apparently everybody on Twitter watched their own little version of the debate that is completely unrelated to everybody else's version of the debate. It's been truly bizarre to see the response to it, where you've just got, you know, one tweet after the other, both saying just completely contradictory things about their interpretation of the debate. So, it seems like a religious topic at this point. It's like you have your belief and you're going to defend it. And you're going to see whatever conversation happens through the lens of your belief. So, you know, some people were saying, you know, one person won. Other people were saying the other people, you know, the other guy won.
And we ran a poll. It's over 65,000 people responded to the poll. Now, the poll was a little biased because Alex has a large audience and he retweeted it. And InfoWars has a large audience and they retweeted it. But 60% of people, of the 65,000 people who voted, did lean round Earth on that poll. So
that's right.
You know, it was a victory as far as our data is concerned. But I'm sure that, you know, Whitsitt has accurate reservations about the accuracy of that poll in terms of people who actually viewed it.
It's not a scientific belief, but it did. The poll before the debate was really evenly split at about 50-50. So
so you gained ground.
I'm racking that up as a win for the Globers.
Now, was there any moment in the debate where he said something or made a point? Because I know you took the preparation of this debate very seriously, and you were studying his previous debates and doing all sorts of research because you were taking this whole thing very seriously, as you should, because the audience called for it, and we kind of wanted to put it to rest whether or not InfoWars was refusing on a network level to talk about this conspiracy theory. But was there any point during the debate where he said something and you're like, oh, man, that's a good point?
I'd heard all of the arguments before, I think, and my strategy going into it, I mean, basically, if you watch Flat Earth debates, it's almost always the same paradigm where you've got the Flat Earther on one side and whoever he's up against is going to be a trust the science, Neil deGrasse Tyson, Bill Nye the Science Guy wannabe.
Right.
And so I thought it'd be interesting to have a Flat Earth debate where the person arguing for the globe is actually a professional conspiracy theorist who doesn't trust the science, who doesn't just say, well, the science says this, so therefore it's true. But, you know, we were some of the first people out the gate against the COVID scam, the climate change scam. I mean, you know, we don't just fall for things because the authorities say it's the truth, because trust the science or the experts say. So, you know, I didn't arrive to my conclusion that the Earth is in fact round because NASA said so. I did it because I just put it through my own filter of logic, which that's one of the strange things is then, you know, I see people on Twitter being like, all Harrison had was appeals to authority. And it's like, I started out the debate by saying NASA lies and I don't trust them and I'm not a part of any organization that I'm trying to uphold. So that's where the bizarreness comes in, where it's like, what debate were you watching? Because you're coming up with stuff that just is completely unassociated with the reality. So, I thought it was a lot of fun. And my whole goal at the end of the day was to not alienate half of our audience that are flat earthers, while also not just not defending my position. So in that regard, I think it was successful.
Well, on that note, too, one of the things that I appreciated about the debate was how cordial it was. So typically when you see a flat earth debate, what you have, like you said, is an establishment scientist being very patronizing and condescending to the flat earth person. And that just alienates the audience. I'm, frankly, on both sides. I find it very alienating when I hear Neil deGrasse Tyson insist on it, even if I agree with the point, or Bill Nye the Science Lie, who only has a bachelor's degree in civil engineering. For some reason, he's the scientist of the world.
Right.
He wears a bow tie, and he was on Nickelodeon when we were kids. But the level of mutual respect that was there was very impressive. And if I were to recommend, and this is not something I'm saying just because I work at InfoWars, but if I were to recommend anyone to watch any flat earth debate who has never explored the topic, I think this is probably a really good 101 level debate. Like, hey, hop in, we're going to cover all the topics, issues of contention, and we're going to do it in a way that's mutually respectful. I mean, even Whitsitt said that he wanted to come back in studio for round two.
Yeah, it was great.
You guys are all friends.
Yeah, we had a good conversation after it, just about how it went. And I think one of the things is we obviously had commercial breaks. We skipped like four commercial breaks.
Yeah.
So I probably should have plugged a little bit more during the debate. Brainforce Ultra, by the way, that debate was brought to you by Brainforce Ultra. But we skipped a lot of debates, skipped a lot of the commercial breaks. But we still had a bit of a time limit. And so, I had certain topics that I wanted to bring up or things I knew he wanted to get to. So I tried to keep it moving. And I think what happens with a lot of the debates is there's no time limit. There's no sort of limitation to the conversation. So when you get into an area of disagreement, they just drill down on those forever and ever and ever. And eventually, a polite disagreement becomes, listen, you freaking idiot, I'm going to. And so, because we had to just move on, we'd get to a topic and we wouldn't quite settle it. But it'd be like, OK, yeah, we're not going to agree on that. But what about this? And then we move on to the next thing. And I think being able to sort of move on without like getting bogged down and starting, the name calling, I think really helped the conversation quite a bit. It was fun.
Well, the fact that you were able to have a fair, amicable debate without a moderator, I think is a testament to the character of both participants.
Well, yeah, he was a very, very good sport in letting us do that. Next time, maybe we'll have a moderator and we do want to do it again. Obviously there was a ton of attention on it. Obviously it's a area of concern for a lot of people. And again, I first started looking into flat earth very sincerely being willing to be convinced. I mean, everybody who hears flat earth at first is like, wait, what? Like, this doesn't make any sense. But I was like, this could be real. I don't trust NASA.
And there are several
either.
People that work here at InfoWars that are flat earthers.
Of course,
like we have a position as a network.
Members of my family are flat earthers. So it was never like these stupid anti-science morons, I'm going to defeat them. It was more like, look, I looked into this and it just ain't true. Like, it just doesn't add up. None of this comports with what I recognize.
Well, that's the crazy thing about NASA. Like, in these other government institutions, they tell so many lies that when they tell the truth, you don't believe them. It's like MSNBC or CNN. They tell so many lies. Sometimes they actually tell the truth, but nobody's going to believe them because they've cried wolf so many times.
Right. And I think about it like with what happened with COVID. To some degree, I trust the medical establishment to a certain degree, but that doesn't mean I'm going to mindlessly take their gene-altering, poison shot,
sure.
Right? So it's like just because I think that COVID was a scam and I think the vaccine was just utterly fraudulent and hugely dangerous, that doesn't mean I won't go to the hospital if I break my arm, right? It doesn't mean that the medical industry is –
doesn't mean I won't use fentanyl if I get in a car accident. No,
right. Well, no, but seriously, I mean, when if your wife gets an epidural while giving birth, that's fentanyl. So it's like just because they lie about some things doesn't mean everything in the entire spectrum of their
Western medicine has been amazing.
Of course,
hemophilia is a really good example. In the 80s, the medicine was causing all the hemophiliacs to get AIDS, and now it's literally saving lives. And it's from some of the same institutions and drug companies. It was evil what they did in the 80s, but it doesn't mean that everything that they do is ineffective.
I feel the same way about NASA when they're like, we've discovered 16 super Earths that hold life, and here's pictures of what they might look like. It's like, okay. Maybe. Yeah, right. You've got a funding bill coming up, so you're trying to get media attention or whatever. Like, I trust NASA, as far as I can throw them, but that doesn't mean that the Earth is flat, right? That, absolutely. I think, is a conclusion that cannot be drawn from the things that we know.
Well, Harrison, it's been an honor and a pleasure to have you on the Alex Jones Show today. We are coming up on a break here in about a minute and a half. After the first 5 minutes of the hour, we are going to be joined by Owen Schroyer in studio. Before we cut to break, I do want to take this opportunity to talk to you about the sponsor of the Flat Earth debate yesterday, Brain Force Ultra, which, of course, you can find at InfoWarsStore.com. Now, I'm told this is going for 40% off. So this is a source of energy you can feel good about. Now, typically, we talk about Turbo Force Plus as the main product that we sell that provides energy. But Brain Force Ultra is an efficient way to get the focus your mind needs to feel like it has that energy from like a Turbo Force or a next level foundational energy. So it's free of toxic additives, natural, and contains no hidden dangerous ingredients. So if you're wanting a nootropic or a supplement that is going to improve your cognitive function, your focus, your memory, your ability to think critically throughout the entire day, there is no better place than InfoWarsStore.com and Brain Force Ultra to get that efficient means of focus to fight the info war. Now, InfoWarsStore.com is the reason that InfoWars is on the air. Now we are coming up on the most important election in the history of our nation. So keeping us on the air is more important now than it ever has been. And as you know, we are under attack on virtually all fronts, whether it's from the mainstream media, whether it's from social media influencers, politicians, or the intelligence community, as recent reports have indicated from leaked videos. We need you now more than ever to go to InfoWarsStore.com and get great products like BrainForce Ultra, which will keep you sharp in the info war while keeping us fighting on the front lines. Stick with us, folks. More on the other side.
When future historians go searching for the final nail in the U.S. coffin, they may well settle on the date April 20th, 2024. On that day, Congress passed legislation to fund 2.5 wars. Hand what's left of our privacy over to the CIA and the NSA and give the U.S. president the power to shut down whatever part of the internet he disagrees with. The U.S. and its allies have already sent over $300 billion to Ukraine, and the country is still losing its war with Russia. Nobody believes another $60 billion will pull a victory from the jaws of defeat. But this additional money is meant to keep up appearances until November at the expense of Americans who are forced to pay for it and Ukrainians who are forced to die for it. Speaker Johnson could not have passed these monstrosities without the full support of House Democrats. And as the majority of Republicans voted against more money for Ukraine. So in the worst example of bipartisanship, Johnson reached across the aisle, stiffed the Republican majority that elected him speaker, and pushed through a massive gift to the warfare corporate welfare state. After the House voted to send another $60 billion to notoriously corrupt Ukraine, members waved Ukrainian flags on the House floor and chanted, "Ukraine, Ukraine." While I find it's distasteful and disgusting, in some ways it seemed fitting. Not to be outdone, the U.S. Senate on that same day passed the extension of Section 702 of the FISA Act, which not only allowed the government to continue spying on us without a warrant, but also contained new language massively expanding how they can spy on us. Many conservative voters are asking, what's the point of Republican control of the House is if the agenda is determined by Democrats? Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer is given reported to have bragged to his colleagues about how easily Speaker Johnson gave Democrats everything they wanted and asked for nothing in return.
The House, the Republicans don't deserve the House. This, with President Trump, is a criminal conspiracy. It's now been shown. You got the White House, you got DOJ. The head guy at DOJ is arguing the frickin' case in New York in a state court for Manhattan prosecutors. Now Julie Kelly, because she went through, she's done the hard work, has shown you what's happening with the classified documents set up. The whole thing is a scam from Fannie Willis to Jack Smith to Big Tish James. A conspiracy on lawfare, and it's working. And the reason it's working, we're allowing it to work. You are worthless, Jim Jordan. You are worthless, Polly Pockets Johnson. Worthless, and I don't care how many puff pieces in Politico, and I don't care how many times Chuck Schumer, that condemns you even more. You are working with and for people out to destroy the country, and it is obvious now, as the nose on your face, it's obvious that the House Republicans want Trump to lose. They're going to raise all this money from Paul Singer to hold the House and maybe add a seat, take a couple of seats in the Senate, and they're just fine with that because they think they can wait MAGA out where they got other news coming.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show, folks. I am Chase Geiser, your host today, and with us for the next 30 minutes or hour, I'm not sure yet, we have Owen Schroyer, the esteemed, acclaimed host of The War Room, which is going to be live this afternoon from 3 to 6 p.m. Central Time. Owen, what is on your mind today, sir?
Well, this is really at the top of my mind. It's bothering me a lot. I didn't get much sleep last night over it. And when I see both sides of the political aisle getting played like we are right now, it really bothers me more so than just even just dealing with the crap that we deal with from the left, the liberals, the Democrats, the progressives, because you kind of feel like, well, there's still some people that see the light. You know, not everybody thinks that children should be mutilated and called trans kids, right? Okay, so that's not something that we're all falling for. But I think that I'm starting to see clearly the 2024 PSYOP that's being played out right now. And it is, to put it simply, the Israel versus Palestine conversation that's now hitting the streets of the United States of America. And when I go back and I think about the follow-up coverage to October 7th, I realize that, you know what, InfoWars was right again. We had it right on the money. The biggest concern was this centuries-old holy war from the other side of the planet is now going to be encompassing our streets. It's going to be encompassing our political debates, our conversations, and now it has. Now it absolutely has. And instead of talking about $100 billion yet again being robbed from the American people annually and given to foreign nations and their border security and who knows what else, most of the money just gets stolen, laundered, the weapons, everything. Now we're talking about Israel and Palestine. And I'm just sick of it. But aside from the frustration, here's the PSYOP that I see playing out now. This is going to be used for the next wave of censorship. This is going to be used for the next wave of trying to control things on the internet. We're already seeing this play out in front of our eyes. There's multiple bills out there making anti-Semitic speech illegal. You can complain about white people all day long. You can even cook that into the system. It's fine. I can even come on air and complain about black people. I can complain about Muslims, and there's no legislation. People might complain and call you names, but there's no legislation. There's no calls from politicians or local governments saying, oh, no, you can't do that. Only when it deals with anti-Semitism. So all that's going to do is push the left even more committed to their pro-Palestinian stance. It's going to push the left to get out into the streets. What did we see after they cleared the Columbia University protest last week? Now the protests have quadrupled in size. Now they've gone to other campuses around the nation. So this is kind of the Pavlov's dog response. This is the problem reaction solution. It's playing out exactly how they want it to play out. And they already have it cooked in where, oh, anti-Semitism is illegal. But here's where it gets dangerous to me, Chase. And the FBI has just released another statement. There have been dozens of these statements. It kind of gets whispered into the wind. We are on a red alert. The FBI is saying we are at an all-time high for a terror attack. Now, it doesn't take a genius to know why. We have a wide-open southern border. So we have a wide-open southern border, tens of millions of people pouring in. We have this centuries-old holy war that you can see. There's genuine hatred on both sides of this. One side says, we want them all dead. The other side says, we want them all dead. Again, this is on the other side of the planet. And now it's in our colleges. It's in our media. It's in our political conversation. As we're getting raked over the coals, we're getting robbed, our children are being destroyed. And this is now the conversation that we're having. I feel at this point a false flag is imminent. And that's not to say that there might be some sort of organic terror event.
They allow it to happen. They create the environment for the amoeba to grow.
Bingo. And so this is where I think we're headed now. And I'm afraid it's going to be blamed on Palestinians, or it's going to be blamed on Iran. It's going to be blamed on some anti-Israel faction, and we're going to get Patriot Act 2.0.
Yep.
We're going to get expansive wars in the Middle East. Israel is once again going to control our foreign policy as the American way of life crumbles to the ground. And this is how I see things playing out. And maybe, this, now this might be getting kind of to the edge of this theory, maybe even it gets so bad and then they use it to cancel the election. So that might be kind of the far end of this.
I think they're going to use it to justify replacing Biden at the DNC. Because if there is an attack and it's an anti-Semitic attack and it comes from any migrant that's crossed the border in the name of Palestine or Iran or whatever, then they can use that to say, look, Joe Biden's obviously incompetent. Look at this border. Why don't we replace him as the candidate with Hillary Clinton or Michelle Obama or Gavin Newsom? I think that the intelligence community is trying to figure out a way to ensure that Trump doesn't win, and they know they have to replace Joe Biden in order to do it smoothly.
It's obviously a difficult thing for them to do. They have to they have to kind of create the opening to remove Biden. And I think that in a way, maybe that's why Jim Jordan and Comer and the others haven't pressed as hard on the gas to remove Biden at this stretch, simply because that might end up doing the Democrats' job. They want to find a way to remove Biden, too, but they can't really do it. So maybe that's why the Republicans are kind of just not pushing the gas on getting rid of Biden or impeaching Biden or really trying to press the criminal indictments in the Biden family, because they realize that's the case. You know, I didn't intend to get into the conversation of who could the Democrats replace Biden with, but nonetheless, the FBI just made another statement. Again, they've made dozens of statements since October 7th and really before too, just talking about the open border and the terror threat. But they just made another statement. It was NBC News basically saying we're at the highest level of terror alert in modern American history, and there could be extremists and terror cells growing in this country, and basically insinuating that a terror attack is imminent, Chase.
Yes. And it's funny because just weeks before the Moscow attack, Owen, they came out and said that there was, you know, they encouraged American citizens or members of the public not to go to any major concerts or public events in Moscow because of a heightened risk. And we know that all the evidence suggests that Ukraine was behind that attack. And of course, the United States intelligence community is behind Ukraine and these other cutouts. So what they do is they warn you of an attack, so when it happens, it doesn't look like they're responsible for the attack. They want to issue the warning. And even going all the way back to 9/11, they're like, oh, we had evidence and tips that there might have been an attack. They want to almost portray a shred of confidence so that you still believe in the system. But I mean, if we look at these conflicts from Afghanistan to Iraq, estimates of 500,000 civilians killed in these wars over the last 20 years, some by ISIS and the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, others by the United States, just collateral damage, or Joe Biden droning families moving water from one place to another, as an example. But we, the United States, have perpetrated attacks and death on a level far beyond the conflict between Palestine and Israel, far beyond the conflict between Ukraine and Russia. I mean, if you really look at what the United States did to Iraq, it is no better, morally speaking, than what Russia did to Ukraine. Frankly, I would say that Russia actually had much more of a justification for invading Ukraine than the United States ever had for invading Iraq. So it comes off to me very hypocritical, frankly, evil that we see our intelligence community and our politicians so antagonistic to the tyranny of Vladimir Putin when we've been doing the same crap for decades.
Well, and that's kind of been a building frustration of the left. Obama really ran in 2008 as anti-war against these foreign interventions. Of course, that didn't last long once he got into the office, but nonetheless. And so, but that's kind of like another level of this PSYOP. You know, conservatives, the reaction is always to, when you see these lunatic leftist protesters, to kind of puff your chest up and, you know, stand up tall and say, hey, no, we're for America. And you might not want to admit that, well, you know, maybe there is some foundational truths to where the left is coming from, maybe morally on these issues. They can't explain it. They're just out there responding to an email or a tweet or something that they get to go protest in the streets. I mean, we literally have videos of these protesters, I think it was in New York, where they say, yeah, I don't know what I'm doing out here. I don't know who organized it. And see, but that's what I'm saying. It's like the response from the right to this has really been kind of pathetic. And they come out and they claim that these protesters are Hamas. I mean, that's just ridiculous. These are ignorant college students who don't know anything. They're LARPing. Right.
They might accidentally be wearing a Hamas scarf, but they don't.
Or they'll say they're Hamas. Right. These people have never been to Palestine. They've never been to the Middle East. They couldn't find it on a map. It's a LARPing event. But then the right wing that's pro-Israel uses this seriously, and they say, oh, my gosh, that's Hamas. Look, it's Hamas on the streets. Look, it's Hamas. We need to do something about this. And then they send out the counterterrorism unit. But this is how I think – this is another piece of evidence that leads me to think that we're into something bigger here. This isn't just a protest flavor of the month. They sent out – they're talking about sending out the National Guard. They sent out the counterterrorism unit. They sent out the counterterrorism unit to New York.
Yeah, where were they on October 7th?
Or but think about it like this. Are they sending out the counterterrorism unit because they actually have a – warning that there's going to be a terror attack? We know the answer to that is yes. But where was this response during the BLM riots of 2020? Why there has been and I mean, if you compare and contrast the BLM riots to the Palestinian protesters, there is no comparing and contrasting. Right.
Or compare it to January 6th, for example. There was way more destruction from BLM riots than January 6th.
So why did they let the BLM riots take place all across the nation, and yet which for the most part are peaceful protesters, whether even if you disagree with their ideology, they're not burning buildings. There might be a couple isolated attacks and incidents with a Jewish person waving a flag or whatever, walking through with the yarmulke. But that's not the overall approach. That's not the overall flavor. Compared to BLM, these are peaceful protests.
Sure.
So why are the counterterrorism units being deployed in New York City? Why are they talking about deploying the National Guard? It just... something doesn't add up. There's something behind this. There's something bigger building here. And again, though, to remove myself from that arena, because I'm so sick of it, honestly, at this point. And it's hard to completely remove it because it's a big news story. And dealing with what's going on in Israel and the Middle East is something that we can't get out of now. It's like we're anchored into this crap.
No matter how America First you are, it's relevant.
So I have to sit here now and probably for the next month or longer, watch American citizens waving Palestinian flags, Israeli flags, and our own Congress waving a Ukrainian flag as our country is literally being invaded. It's the biggest invasion in the history of the world. It is the biggest invasion in the history of the world happening on our southern border. I'm sitting here watching that. I'm watching our way of life crumble. I'm watching the cost of living go up. I'm watching the housing market price people out of it. I'm watching credit card debt go to record levels. We're watching defaults on loans go to record levels. This is real stuff. This is happening to all Americans. And they go out in the streets and put on a headscarf and wave a Palestinian flag. And they go out on the streets in a counter protest with a yarmulke and wave an Israeli flag. And they go out on the floor of Congress and wave a Ukrainian flag. When do we get to care about America? When do American citizens get to be considered in these discussions? How bad does it have to get before we realize, oh, wow, we've just been robbed blind. We've just had our entire country invaded. We've just had our entire system of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights broken. I've been over here waving a different nation's flag because I thought I was a social justice warrior. I thought I was virtue signaling. I thought I was doing the right thing. I put it in my bio. I thought I was cool. How bad does it have to get? How clown world does this have to get before all of these students and all of these people waving all these foreign nations flags realize that, oh, wait a second, my country is actually the biggest victim in all of this.
Right. And the perpetrator is our own government, too. So just to back you up, Alex sent this clip over before the show today. This is from Benny Johnson, clip number 16. This is the most important video on the internet right now, according to Benny. Best 90 seconds you will spend all day is watching this MSNBC clip. Seriously, let's go ahead and run this clip and then we'll unpack it, Owen.
For the first time in our nation's history, a 30-year-old man or woman isn't doing as well as his or her parents were at 30. That is the social compact breaking down. People aged 30 to 34, 60% of them in 1990 had one child. Now it's 27%. People are opting out of America. They're not optimistic about it. They're not having kids. Young people aren't having sex. They're not meeting. They're not mating. The pool of emotionally and economically viable men shrinks every day, which lessens household formation. So we have a real issue. Young people are enraged. So it turns every cut, every movement into an opportunistic infection because, quite frankly, they are just pissed off. They look up, they see wealth, exceptional wealth across my generation and people in certain industries, and they are really struggling. Their purchasing power is going down, and the incumbents create artificial scarcity on campus. We take pride in rejecting 90% of our applicants, so the incumbents who already have a degree see their degree go up in value. We get very concerned with housing and traffic once we own a housing. Housing permits are sequestered from young people. Housing prices have gone from 290 to 420 in the last 4 years. So a young person, a house, stocks that I don't own skyrocket in value. Let's have COVID relief and flush the markets and take assets way up, because if a million people dying would be bad, would be tragic if I got less wealthy. And we're doing it on their credit card. Young people have every reason to be enraged, and every issue they see, they look up, they get angry, and they see someone doing better than them. And then every day it is speedballed in their face that they are failing, that they are not doing as well as everyone around them. We have lost the script. Our kids are more anxious and more depressed and more obese and more addicted. And we have made a purposeful decision to let this happen by ensuring the people around this table stay wealthy at the cost of young people.
I think Scott Galloway nailed it right there. When you have bankruptcies up 20% year over year, when you have interest rates through the roof on mortgages, when you have credit card debt at record highs, and all of this struggling, and the main thing being that under Trump, you had to work one good job in order to make ends meet. Now everybody's working three crappy jobs to make ends meet. And I mean, I see people in my neighborhood. I live in a fairly nice neighborhood. We built our house in a new developed neighborhood. There are people in our neighborhood group that are reaching out, hey, just lost my job at Google, starting a car wash business. Like, stuff like that is happening. Everyone, there's no shame in that. There's no shame in hustling and working hard. And if you got to drive Uber or if you got to drive DoorDash to make ends meet, I get it. I would do the same thing if I needed to. Absolutely. But the fact that Americans are having to do jobs like this that are way beneath their skill set and their ability to contribute to civilization is really indicative of the crimes of our political class and our own people. So it really, in that context, it's such a shame that we see protests on behalf of either Israel or either Palestine or either Ukraine when we have so much crime and corruption impacting our own people by our own government with the wide open border. Do you think that 18 to 30 year old Americans, Owen, are ever going to wake up and realize that they're protesting the wrong damn thing?
Well, I don't know. I mean, college students in recent history have always been ignorant to a certain degree, myself included. I'm not removing myself from that conversation. I think that there's a big part of the puzzle, though, that he misses there. And he obviously leaves it out, I think, with cause, because he doesn't talk about $100 billion annually for foreign countries, right?
Right.
People see that, right? These he talks about young people being enraged. Well, they see that. They see how our money is being given to foreign nations. I mean, that should enrage them. But we kind of have this, I mean, it's almost like it's the perfect example of a compare and contrast from the Trump years to the Biden years, where we can see probably clearer for the first time that policy really has this big of an impact, that policy really is this important. A simple energy policy can make the difference in $1,000, $1,500 a month, maybe $500, depending on your current life situation. I mean, a simple energy policy can be the difference between living paycheck to paycheck and being able to put some money in your savings account. A simple energy policy. And so we have now lived it with 4 years of Trump versus 4 years of Biden. We can now see the difference. We have a very short window of time, a very easy compare and contrast to actually see the difference there. And that's what I think makes it so frustrating to people that actually do pay attention to this stuff. They realize that this is so unnecessary. It's so unnecessary for us to have this high cost of living. But you just add the frustration of, oh, okay, $100 billion annually for illegal immigrants, $100 billion annually for foreign countries' wars, for blood money, on top of the policies that cause the cost of living to go up. All of this is completely unnecessary. Meanwhile, your infrastructure is crumbling. Your cities are less safe than they've ever been. I mean, everybody's probably been a victim of a robbery in the last 12 months. I mean, probably everybody. I have. I've had people steal packages off the front porch of my house.
Sure.
So, I mean, this is something everybody is dealing with. And again, the question you asked, well, when are they going to put down the foreign country's flag and pick up the American flag? Well, I guess we're starting to realize why you have all the anti-American propaganda running rampant in the media, running rampant in the education system, so that they don't. So that when America is being conquered, they put the flag down and they think that, okay, well, I don't really care. I don't identify as American. I don't identify as this. And that's exactly what we're witnessing now.
What's crazy is I started a business in 2016, and for the majority of Trump's presidency, his first term, I lived in Orange County, California. Now, Orange County, California, traditionally speaking, has been thought of as like a red dot in a blue state, but it's not. I think the last couple of election cycles, it's voted left. Certainly when I was there, it was run by leftists. And the funny thing is, everything was in the business community. I was going to Chamber of Commerce meetings, networking meetings. I was growing my business, meeting with business owners locally. The whole vibe, the zeitgeist, was this optimism about business. And nobody ever, no leftist would attribute that optimism to Donald Trump's leadership. Now we have a situation where the entire zeitgeist is hopelessness and helplessness, and businesses are rolling back expenses and they're playing defense now instead of offense. And everybody is on the left is blaming Trump still somehow for the pain that they feel. So the cognitive dissonance there is so palpable. Do you really think it's just a matter of the establishment media and these establishment institutions, from our entertainment all the way to the press, having that substantial of an impact on the psyche of the people? I mean, there's got to be a breaking point where they're like, people snap out of it.
Well, think about what they're consuming. They're consuming, all they're getting is anti-American messaging, right? Anybody who puts a pro-America message out there, like Donald Trump, they're the ones being attacked. They're a racist. They're a bigot. They're a Nazi. They're all these things. So they're not going to consume these things. They buy into that. So they don't consume the people that are trying to support America. They don't consume the messages of an InfoWars or other hosts that want to build up America, save America. They're told that's the demon. That's the enemy. You have to ignore this. You have to discount this. You have to censor this. We have to destroy this. And so they buy into that. So all they're consuming is the anti-America message. That's all they consume. That's all they get. And I guess it is a cognitive dissonance to not realize you're an American. You don't live in Israel. You don't live in Palestine. You don't live in Ukraine. You don't live in Russia.
Right.
You live in America.
And America isn't something that happens to you. You're something that happens to your country. So to say like, oh, I'm against America as an American is just to be against the self. I mean, we are the ones that actually have an influence on our culture.
Well, we're supposed to be a country of self-government.
Right.
So that's really where we've lost the way. If you really want to get down to brass tacks, that's where we've lost the way. If we were still a nation of self-government, we wouldn't get taxed out the wazoo, and we wouldn't have a situation where Congress is waving Ukrainian flags because they can get unlimited money for any war they want overseas in a country that most Americans probably couldn't even locate on a map.
Absolutely. Well, that tea tax is actually looking pretty good compared to all the tax that we have now. Folks, stick with us for more on the other side. We are going to go to a short break here. Make sure you check out Next Level Foundational Energy at drjonesnaturals.com. That's drjonesnaturals.com. It'll elevate your energy levels with essential vitamins and say goodbye to crashes. Check it out for that foundational energy that will keep you going in the info war. Visit drjonesnaturals.com. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show, folks. I am Chase Geiser, your host this afternoon, joined by the great Owen Schroyer, who will be on the air in an hour and a half again as well, hosting the War Room at Infowars.com/show. Now, Alex posted this on X. We can do overhead cam, please. He says, this has always been the plan. Create civil unrest and use that as the pretext to trigger digital lockdowns. This is a post that he was quote tweeting from Colin Rugg. Just in, Columbia University has announced classes will be remote for the rest of the year as anti-Israel protests rock the school. There are now growing calls for tuition refunds for the $70,000 a year now that it has practically turned into an online school. Owen, looking at this, what are your thoughts?
Well, it just gets back to everything that I've been talking about here, how it's all a distraction. It's all going to be used, as Alex points out here, to bring in some new levels of tyranny, some new levels of government-sanctioned censorship. But I really still believe, as we opened up the hour, that this is going to lead to a false flag in that I mean, there could be some sort of an organic terror event. There could be some terrorists coming in from other countries that actually do it. But it's like you were saying, it's building the environment to have this happen and then letting it happen so that you can engage in your next level of power grab, your next agenda, kind of like what a lot of people think Israel did on October 7th. So that's what I see coming here. But we were talking about in the break how things are so different now, where I was in college. I was at a big university, University of Missouri, Columbia, Mizzou as it's known, in 2008 and 2009. And there were protests. I remember Obama came to our campus and there were a bunch of people there, and there were protests and there were discussions at the lunch table, in the cafeteria, whatever, in the classroom. And sometimes they might even get a little heated, but it was never hate-filled and vitriolic and looking at each other like they're the enemy. This is a new brand. I mean, this is a new vibe that we're witnessing here. And to think that this is all about a foreign conflict in the other side of the planet that's been going on a holy war for centuries. Most of these people, I mean, who knows if they're really Jewish or Palestinian or whatever. I would guess most are not. And yet, if they are, it's likely that their families moved here to America to get away from that, to get away from that conflict. And now you're going to bring it here? Now you're going to bring it to our streets? I'm just fed up with it. But it doesn't matter whether I support one side or the other. It doesn't matter whether I like it or am fed up with it. This is so clearly going to be used for a new level of censorship, a new level of Patriot Act 2.0. I really think they're building something big here.
Yeah, and even Republicans are behind it with passing warrantless surveillance through FISA.
Of course. Well, and I mean, there's only a small fraction of the Republican Party that won't get on its knees whenever the Israel lobby tells it to and throw some money down. So you're dealing with that as well. And this is creating more strife, I think, in Congress. The Democrat Party has its anti-Israel wing. Everybody knows about the Squad. It's no secret, but yet they're relatively silent on these issues, and that's for a reason. They know where the money comes from, and Nancy Pelosi cracks the whip. They get right back in line. AOC goes out in the woods with Joe Biden and drags him along. So, I mean, they're all playing ball. There was actually a speech by J.D. Vance today. I was going to mention this earlier when you were talking about U.S. foreign involvement and entanglement and how many lives have been lost because of it. J.D. Vance gave a speech on the floor earlier today kind of about that and how, you know, this used to be a Christian nation, but because of our foreign involvements, a lot of Christians have been murdered. A lot of Christians in the Middle East specifically have had their lives.
The total neglect of the Armenian genocide that happened recently as well.
Well, and you know, and that's another issue. Notice how it really is at this point. It's the media that decides what you're upset about.
Right. They pick and choose the humanitarian crisis to focus on.
You could pick any humanitarian crisis that's going on in any part in the world. I mean, you could go to Africa. You can go to Somalia. You can go to Yemen. You can go to China. I mean, you could pick your humanitarian crisis. But this is the flavor of the month. This is where the propaganda, this is where the focus is. And it's all about money and it's all about power.
Well, the thing that alarms me, and I'm somebody who is, I wouldn't use the term Islamophobic because I believe in freedom of religion, and I don't hate anyone for being Muslim. I don't have a problem with people practicing Islam, but I am somebody who is vehemently opposed to that religion, not just as a Christian, but because of all the political implications of its philosophy, right? Sharia law, suicide bombing. I just think it's a violent, ignorant, screwed up religion that's catalyzed, I think, over 40% of marriages in the Middle East are between first or second cousins. They certainly are on the Gaza Strip. I'm not a pro-Muslim guy. Fine, call me Islamophobic because I believe that Muhammad was a pedophile and a terrible prophet. But that being said, it is incredibly bothersome to me that of all the things we can criticize here in the United States, Israel is the only example of something that I have seen people lose their ability to bank for criticizing, from Ryan Dawson, who had to move to Japan because he came out with some content against Israel and its potential involvement in 9/11 and other things, or Anthony Torba, the leader of Gab. I mean, there are countless examples of people who literally cannot have a bank account in the United States because of their statements about Israel, not about Jews, not their support for terrorist organizations or their explicit even support for anti-Semitism, but just because they have been vehemently antagonistic toward Israel. And regardless of whether they're right or not, there is something deeply wrong when you cannot participate in a monetary system in a free country because of your political position on a foreign nation.
Well, this is a real development that's happening right now. I think that neutral, fair observers that don't really have a dog in the fight, I would put myself in that grouping. We've observed that. I mean, that's a neutral observation, and I think that it applies to beyond just debanking. It obviously applies to censorship on social media platforms, even on X, right? We still see that. That's like the one thing you can't talk about on X. Or Ben Shapiro will show up in a cape and give you a yarmulke and fly you over to a Holocaust museum.
Right.
So people are observing that and they're reporting on that. I don't even have a dog in the fight. That's just something that's obviously happening. And so what I think comes next with these protests, as it looks like just right down the road here at UT Austin, it's starting to get out of hand. So this is obviously going to go nationwide. So the heavy hand is being played, right? The heavy hand is being played. Anti-Semitism is the one untouchable. You can't do it. You want to hate white people? Fine. You can even talk bad about black people. You'll probably be okay. They'll call you racist, but you can do it. You can talk bad about Muslims. They'll call you an Islamophobe, but you'll be okay. But no, anti-Semitism is now a crime. You can't do it. Well, they know that. Well, that's only going to push their protests to the next level, trying to shut down their protests and say, no, this is the one group you can't criticize. This is the one war where you can't pick a side. You have to support this side of it. That's all you can do. That's only going to make their protests even more fiery. That's only going to give them more ammunition and reason to get out in the streets. So I think that this is being done by design. I think they're playing the heavy hand on the anti-Semitism issue and on the Israel issue. I think they're playing the heavy hand to try to stoke these protests. I think they want them to grow. I think they want them to get bigger. Yeah. They probably even want them to get violent. I don't know if you can make them as violent as the Black Lives Matter riots, but I think that that's the goal. I think that's why you have the heavy-handed approach. I think that's why it's all in on this right now, because that's all it's done. Whether that's the goal or not, forget about it. That's what it's done. This was an isolated protest to a couple cities, maybe specifically New York. Now it's in Texas. Now it's in California. Now it's in Detroit. Now it's in Ohio. Now it's in Tennessee. So because of the pushback and the heavy-handedness of you can't criticize Israel or you can't be pro-Palestine or you're a Nazi or you're Hamas, that's only going to make these protests grow.
Absolutely. Now, we're coming up on a break here in about 30 seconds. So I want to take this opportunity to remind everybody that Ultimate Fish Oil is back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com. It is 40% off. And I'm not just trying to abruptly go into a plug here. It makes sense that you would go to InfoWarsStore.com to help keep InfoWars on the air because of everything that Owen's been talking about over the last hour. This censorship and this political, psychological manipulation of our people, it's now more important than ever that the truth can be told worldwide. Visit InfoWarsStore.com for Ultimate Fish Oil right now.
America's college campuses is horrific. Anti-Semitic mobs have taken over leading universities. They call for the annihilation of Israel. They attack Jewish students. They attack Jewish faculty. This is reminiscent of what happened in German universities in the 1930s. It's unconscionable. It has to be stopped. It has to be condemned and condemned unequivocally. But that's not what happened. The response of several university presidents was shameful. Now, fortunately, state, local, federal officials, many of them have responded differently, but there has to be more. More has to be done. It has to be done not only because they attack Israel. That's bad enough. Not only because they want to kill Jews wherever they are. That's bad enough. It's also, when you listen to them, it's also because they say not only death to Israel, death to the Jews, but death to America. And this tells us that there's an anti-Semitic surge here that has terrible consequences. We see this exponential rise of anti-Semitism throughout America and throughout Western societies as Israel tries to defend itself against genocidal terrorists who hide behind civilians. Yet it is Israel that is falsely accused of genocide, Israel that is falsely accused of starvation and all sundry war crimes. It's all one big libel, but that's not new. We've seen in history that anti-Semitic attacks were always preceded by vilification and slander. Lies that were cast against the Jewish people that are unbelievable, yet people believe them. And what is important now is for all of us who are interested and cherish our values and our civilization, to stand up together and to say enough is enough. We have to stop anti-Semitism because anti-Semitism is the canary in the coal mine. It always precedes larger conflagrations that engulf the entire world. So I ask all of you, Jews and non-Jews alike, who are concerned with our common future and our common values, to do one thing. Stand up, speak up, be counted. Stop anti-Semitism now.
There you have it, folks. What do you think about that? It strikes me as mystifying that you would have Netanyahu coming out saying that we have an anti-Semitism problem here in the United States. And I understand why he would, because it's in the interest of his own national security to rally the United States in support of him in this conflict. But it's mystifying that we would see that today when on Saturday, on Hitler's birthday, the United States gave $61 billion to Nazis in Ukraine. So we funded Nazis on Hitler's birthday, but the anti-Semitism problem isn't in Ukraine. It's in the United States. What do you think about that, Owen?
I want to talk about irony. How about the fact that the left was crying Nazi about anybody they disagreed with for 7 years, and now they're actually going full Nazi? But that's just some fodder there. What I find mystifying, as you say it, how about this? Why is Benjamin Netanyahu commenting on the state of United States universities? Where does he get off thinking that he can comment about activity on universities in the United States of America? I'm a little confused at where he thinks he comes into play here. Why don't you worry about Israel? Okay, so that irks me a little bit. But to go beyond just commenting on the status, he's calling for a cease of the protests? He Benjamin Netanyahu is telling Americans they can't protest at a university in the United States of America? I'm sorry. Last time I checked, you are not the president of the United States, and even the president of the United States cannot stop First Amendment activity. So you can disagree with the protests. We still have a right to protest. And if these protesters want to redress their grievances because they don't like the U.S. funding Israel, then they have a right. They literally have a right to do so. Now, if they start blocking streets, mop them up. Mop them up, throw them in jail. You shouldn't be able to block the streets. You start blocking entrances to campus and stopping people from getting in class, again, I'd say, okay, if you're stopping the flow of society, if you're stopping the flow of civilization, then yeah, okay, I think at that point you've had enough. But if you're peacefully marching, even if I disagree with it, you have that right. If you're peacefully protesting and not engaging in any violence or stopping the flow of society, then I think you have a right. But where does Benjamin Netanyahu get off thinking that he can call for protests to stop in the United States? So all this is going to do is add fuel to the fire. All this is going to do is increase the protests and make them bigger. So again, it's back to that we talked about earlier. But this is where my frustration continues. Where is the issue with anti-Americanism on college campuses? Where is the issue with systemic racism happening on college campuses? I went to UT probably about 7 or so years ago. They removed a statue. I forget who the statue was. It was some founder, I think, of UT. It was a big Texas legend. He had a big statue there. And they removed it because they said he was a racist in the middle of the night. And as they're removing the statue, they're chanting death to America. They're chanting death to America. These are college liberals at UT chanting death to America. Where's the big national case? Where's the big national news? Where's the president of the United States saying this is a problem? Donald Trump would have. So what is this thing? So we can be anti-American on college universities. That's fine. We can be anti-white on college campuses, anti-man. We can do all this stuff. We can be anti-science. We can be anti-common sense. We can do all of these things on the college campus. That's fine. But the minute you want to protest against Israel, it has to be shut down. And the prime minister of Israel thinks he can come in here and call for it to be shut down? I'm sorry. This is just wrong on so many levels. But all I see is this adding fuel to the flame, and now these protests are just going to continue to get bigger.
Well, and I absolutely 100% agree with you, Owen, and I am not somebody who supports these protests. I'm somebody who's, like I said, a very, very reluctant to support Islam, just generally speaking. And my sentiment on the matter is, why is this sentiment in the country at all? Why have we allowed it to seep across the board? I don't think that they should be silenced or censored. I think absolutely they have the right to protest. But what's even more alarming that came to mind while you were talking, Owen, is Columbia is shutting down the campus for remote classes and in favor of remote classes because of the danger to Jewish students. And what you said is really true. These protests are less violent by several standard deviations than the BLM protests that were occurring during the Summer of Love years ago. And they were never shutting down campus for those. Now, I know that we were in the middle of a pandemic, so there were some shutdowns that were already in place, but...
No, but that was the exception. The protests were encouraged.
My point is, I don't think that these protesters would actually just attack Jews.
I've seen some isolated incidents of violence, but it's isolated. And again, right. If you walk through a crowd waving an Israeli flag or wearing a yarmulke, I'm not saying you're asking to get punched, right? That's not fair. You should be able to do that.
Of course.
If you want to do that. But also, I mean, look, when I go into a crowd of rabid liberals wearing a Trump hat, like, there's a reason I go with security. I know right. I'm putting myself in a compromising situation. So, I mean, again, Jews should be able to walk around college campus and not feel worried. But it's just reaching new levels where people are coming out and saying, look, Hamas has taken over universities. Shut up. These are 18, 19-year-old ignorant college students that are buying into the protest flavor of the month. It's not Hamas. Okay? It's not Hamas taking over right. college campuses. So it's the left is taking the bait. The right is taking the bait. Meanwhile, the United States of America is being robbed.
Well, and you know, it's funny that you mentioned this because we see this. The speech come out from Netanyahu in the context of what happened on Saturday. And I could be mistaken, Owen, but I am 99.9% sure that along with the over $90 billion that we gave to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan, we passed the muscle of the TikTok ban. Right.
And so yeah, they put it in there.
Right. We've seen Israel come out and say that TikTok is a major problem and the content that's going viral on that platform is not only allowing the massive collection of U.S. data by the CCP, but it's perpetuating lies about the genocide being allegedly committed in Palestine. So we see our own politicians not only giving billions of dollars to Israel and Ukraine, Nazis and Jews, but we see our politicians banning TikTok for allegedly spying on us while simultaneously within the same week passing or renewing FISA's ability to surveil U.S. Yeah. citizens without a warrant. So it's okay when we do it to American citizens. It's okay when the United States government does it to Americans, but it's not okay when China does it. And I'm not a fan of TikTok. I think the CCP is an evil organization. Don't get me wrong. But when you pass legislation like this, it is a brazen, brazen violation of our rights and our freedom of speech. And wasn't it the ADL that was famous decades ago for fighting for the Nazis' right to protest here in the United States? How far have we gone?
Well, let's first of all correct the record. It is okay for China to spy on Americans. They do it every day.
Sure.
So and let's put this whole TikTok conversation under wraps. It's not a TikTok ban. They are forcing the Chinese national to sell it to a Jewish correct. Individual. That's right. what they're trying to do. And if they really cared about Chinese influence in our nation's politics, well, Joe Biden is bought and paid for by the Chinese communists. That's on record. China basically runs Apple, refuses to cooperate with the FBI or other elements of our government when they're involved in criminal investigations. They fly a spy balloon over the entire continental United States, and it doesn't even get shot down until it completes its mission. So, no, the government does let China spy on us. This isn't about China. This is all about having a platform controlled by a certain interest group that they don't want.
Stay tuned, folks. More on the other side. Owen Schroyer.
Imagine what we can do next. Four more years. Pause.
Four more years. Pause. Four more years. Four more years.
Unbelievable. And this isn't the first time that he said, I understand if you're not accustomed to using a teleprompter to make mistakes like that, especially right at the beginning of your presidency. He'd been retired from politics for a number of years. He hadn't been the vice president since 2016. Running for office, and I can imagine maybe the first time he used a teleprompter to make the mistake of reading the words between the asterisks and saying pause. But this is like the half a dozenth time Biden has made this mistake because he's off his rocker, folks. Now, we've had an amazing show on the Alex Jones Show today, and it has been an honor and a privilege to be your host. My name is Chase Geiser. We were joined by Harrison Smith, the host of the American Journal in the morning from 8 to 11 a.m. Central Time, right on InfoWars InfoWars.com/show. And of course, the last hour, we were joined by the great Owen Schroyer, who hosts The War Room at InfoWars.com/show from 3 to 6 p.m. We are about ready to turn things over to Jason Burmus, who is an amazing fourth hour guest. I had the privilege of being on a show with him just a couple of weeks ago. He always does a great job. Jason, are you there with us now? How are you, sir?
I'm good, my man. Thank you for having me. And we got a jam-packed fourth hour, and I think a really important one, because one of the stories that I haven't seen anywhere else was actually broken right here in Iowa. And I know everybody thinks that we can maybe overwhelm the mail-in ballots. Maybe we can overwhelm the ballot harvesting, the illegals, and the machines if enough people turn out. But what people don't understand is that there is now a movement to fast-track the exit polling software to full digital. What does this mean? Well, traditionally here in Scott County, Iowa, Chase, you had a paper system, you know, like an actual audit. So you would sign something, there'd be a paper record, and that's how you would actually have the exit polls in conjunction with basic Microsoft Office software. That's gone, okay? They fast-tracked it, and now it's gone full digital to a tablet. So there is no paper receipt on the exit polls. This is very, very alarming, because one of the things that we really didn't have were honest exit polls in 2020 due to the COVID-1984 nightmare. So we're going to be going over that, and then we're also going to be going over the new U.S. Global Health Security Initiative that very much mirrors the WEF and the United Nations, but it's right here at home in partnership with 50 countries. And when you see one of the ladies running it, you're not going to believe it. It's actually Jen Psaki's sister, Stephanie.
Wow. Well, Jason, we're going to give the ball to you here in just a couple of minutes. We're coming up on a break here in about a minute and a half or so. So before you take over after this next break, I do want to remind the audience to check out Next Level Foundational Energy at drjonesnaturals.com. That's drjonesnaturals.com. Now, there are several things that this product does. It elevates your energy levels. It's got essential vitamins, and it doesn't have the crash that's typically associated with stimulants and things of that nature. So I highly recommend that you, the audience, check out Next Level Foundational Energy at drjonesnaturals.com and be the reason that we are still on the air. We know that Alex Jones has been under attack. We know that InfoWars has been under attack. Owen Schroyer, Alex's family has been under attack. So by going to drjonesnaturals.com, you can help ensure that freedom of speech and truth is broadcast worldwide over the next several months as we come up on the most pivotal time in our nation's history. Now, keep in mind, like I said, this is not like a bunch of coffee or an energy drink or other stimulants like Adderall or things like that that they've been prescribing our children since the 80s. This is foundational energy that cleans out the cells, allows the mitochondria, which is the energy powerhouse of the cell, to work at full optimal performance, which enables you to actually have the energy, not just feel energized, not just trick your brain into thinking that it has energy, but this actually gives you that foundational energy that will not crash and will last throughout the day, so you can fight even harder and better in the info war. Check out Next Level Foundational Energy at drjonesnaturals.com. Be the reason that InfoWars is still on the air. Be part of the resistance and the fight against global tyranny by the New World Order. And stick with us for more from Jason Burmus on the other side, folks.
Welcome to the fourth hour of the Alex Jones Show. I am Jason Burmus, and vote harder. If we just vote harder, we can change the system. Now, let me start with this. I'm not telling you to not go out there and vote, but I am telling you that we have to be aware of the systems within that mechanism that are extremely fraudulent and unchecked. We have to know the obstacles going out there. And although I do agree with Alex, as he's talking about an overwhelming amount of people going out to vote for Donald Trump this time around and overwhelming the system, that's well and good, but if we already have rigged machines, and we're going to start there, and now we may have rigged systems of exit polls, which are supposed to keep them in check, well, we have a huge problem. Now, let me start here, okay? A lot of people, again, and I hear this all the time from like conservative media, Chinese-style censorship. Chinese, no, it's just censorship. Alex is right. We are in the new world order right now. I'd say we're not in the alpha phase. We're not in full operational mode. It's not consumer release, but we're in beta 100%. 100%. So let's take a look at my search here over at Google, largest search engine in the world, one of the largest technopolies you could ever imagine. I typed in mandatory audit after exit polls discrepancy. Now, as you scroll down through this, there's really nothing here about when you would have a mandatory audit or want to audit them from discrepancies on exit polls. This is Google, okay? Same exact search on DuckDuckGo's, and they're giving you numbers. Greater than 100 or 5%, et cetera. I mean, .gov sites. None of these results, none of them were on that initial Google page. Okay, so stop with the Chinese-style censorship. We're in censorship territory, no doubt about it. We're in fraction magic and black box voting world on another level. And that really brings me to what I do for a living. Okay, for those that don't know, I've been in this arena for almost 20 years, and I watched the rise of hacking democracy, which we're going to get into, and the work of Bev Harris, who unfortunately, and we're going to show some of her work, eventually got burned out because the situations just kept getting worse and worse and worse, and we didn't have any accountability or audits in these systems. And now, with the mail-in ballots, and if you rig exit polls, what do we have left? We don't have a constitutional republic based in democratic elections at all, not even close. And so I want to start here with Carter and Baker. Everybody getting a good look, Carter and Baker? All right. Right here, 2005. And this is what we like to call doing our own research, okay? I know you're not supposed to do your own research, but if you have a brain, and you have some search skills, even in Google, because I'm not specifying anything. I know that the Carter-Baker Commission exists. And I know I've watched it on C-SPAN. So I brought it up, and I clipped this out, okay? And this clip is extremely important because this is all the way back in 2005, all right? Now, we're talking about almost 20 years ago. And often when this was referenced during the 2020 election, especially, again, from the right and conservative media and mainline news, what were they talking about? Mail-in ballots were talked about in this as a way to rig elections. No one whispered anything about the machines. Now, when we play this, I just want everybody to know everything that Carter suggested was never put into place. We have no audits of this system. And worse yet, he only suggests a random audit of 1% to 2% of the machines that are used in voting. Again, this is in 2005. 1% or 2%. I would say a good place to start is like 30 to 50%. Forget about 1% or 2% is still a joke. You might still be able to game that system. But again, don't let it come out of my mouth. Let's talk about this because, again, it's not even on the table anymore. We never talk about this stuff.
There's some fruit.
One other point that I don't think we've mentioned is that, as you know, under Harbaugh, there was a strong impetus to have electronic voting, to do away with the hanging chads and so forth. And that's good, but there's been a wide range of concern that this completely secret and impenetrable system of computer software might open up an avenue of fraud. So one of the things we're recommending is that there be a backup on paper.
So let's just stop. I mean, obviously, we're just suggesting maybe we have a paper backup for, you know, this vast array of fraud via digital machines. And by the way, this is the official press conference. They actually give another one before this. Nobody talked about this in 2020. I pray people start talking about this now in 2024. And ring the alarm bells.
Which other countries are already doing, by the way. It's a simple technological matter. Nevada did it this past year. So that there can be some comparison on the part of the voter, this is the way I touch the screen, did my ballot comply? And they look at the paper ballot. Another thing is that even if the voter's not concerned individually, collectively, there needs to be some way to judge either allegations of discrepancies or fraud and a very close election to confirm the accuracy of the overall report. And the third thing.
Let's stop before the third thing. Let's think about how far we've come. Not only do we not have that, not only do we not have the ability to audit these things, we now have a judicial system that says when these lawsuits are brought forth so that they can do these sorts of things via discovery and access, they just say you don't have standing. And then let's make it worse. They accuse you of criminal activity and wage lawfare against you for daring to question the system. And then eventually, if you're not found guilty, you have to plead down because they're not going to stop. So forget about just accusations. You make accusations now, and you might be going to jail, whether they're true or not, in this authoritarian system that, again, has no audit whatsoever.
The thing is to make sure that everyone knows in advance that there will be an auditing procedure undertaken so that anybody who's tempted at the beginning to do something fraudulent will know that 1 or 2% of all the voting places in the state will be arbitrarily selected and the paper ballot and the electronic ballot compared. This would go a long way to deter any kind of temptation to fraud.
Any kind of tempt, because elections never get rigged. There's no fraud. We haven't seen that throughout history. 1 to 2%, and we still don't have that. That's what a bad joke this is. Now, with this system now I'm talking about, and I think that this is important, I want everybody to go check this out. It's a process formality, a Scott County auditor and supervisor timeline. And props to Todd McGreevy. He's been publishing this since 1993. Hard copies go out on top of the website still to this day. He attends these meetings. And in this, he shows how this thing was just, how long these processes had been and what they utilized. And then all of a sudden how they fast-tracked for 2024. I mean, it's very detailed, this new software. And I want everybody to take a look at the picture. You just sign your name digitally now. There is no paper trail. Yeah, AI can't create fake people or fake signatures in literal seconds. And there's certainly no software that would do that to coincide with the results of machines that might be rigged, right? Bueller. I mean, this is obvious stuff. If you want to see exactly how they fast-tracked it, you can check out my interview with Todd over on the Twitter. Follow me on X. And again, I want to get back into the idea that I interview a lot of people in a day. 5 days a week, guys. I do a show where I interview at least one person, sometimes up to three. And then I have a nightly show on TNT. That's on Patriot TV, where I interview another four people plus my producer. Five people a night. And they constantly, I interviewed Joe Kent. He's running for Congress in Washington State. These machines are a problem. And we're still not even talking about them. Now, we're going to get into Bev Harris in a moment, but I want to talk about kind of pop culture and where it's gone. In 2006, her work was on HBO, when HBO did some, pretty good journalism. Now they're worried about bashing Alex Jones. Hacking Democracy, and this talked about fraction magic. And we're going to talk about GEM software. I'm actually going to play an old school documentary intro from Bev, just kind of laying it out. I think it's like a 24-minute full documentary. Obviously, we're not going to play the whole thing here today, but you can go check it out on top of it. So HBO was actually doing real work on this stuff. It's almost 20 years ago. But when the last time in any meaningful way, the media or politicians talked about hacking an election was 2016. All right. They hacked the election. And meanwhile, no one hacked the machines from Russia. That's not a real thing. Okay. They overcame the fraction magic. It was just too much. The software just couldn't handle it. Because I got news for you. There's a, in my mind at least, there is like zero chance Hillary Clinton won the popular vote. Dude, again, like, are we in reality or are we in the post-truth world? Can we not acknowledge that Donald Trump has been the most rock star politician of my generation, whether you like it or not? I've only seen his popularity gain. Even when people get mad at him, the other side that they're giving you is so bad that no one can even think about it. Now, before we get to Bev Harris and this documentary, I also want to point out that The Simpsons, everybody talks about The Simpsons and predictions and yada, yada, yada. They are stellar for even commentary at the time. Now, about 5 years ago, I stopped watching them. But for those that don't know, I was a Simpsons addict. I'd seen every single episode, loved animation in general, really thought that was going to be my career path as I was like accepted into the Art Institute of Philadelphia, was unable to go there, ended up going to state school. That's where I kind of learned computer graphics into editing. And I moved away from animation, but always enjoyed it because of the humor and the political satire on top of it. Well, the Treehouse of Horror episodes are my absolute favorite. And this is how things were perceived. Now, I do want to make note that even then, there was this weird media narrative that they were going to steal it from the Barack star. Okay, and that's where this goes, via the evil machines. But as any, and listen, I don't think that Barack Obama stole the election. I think he was legitimately elected. I mean, he had a PR campaign, a Barry Sotero style, like nobody else. This guy was on T-shirts. He was Hope and Change. He was very, very intelligent. He knew the right answers to say at the time, like, we were going to get out of Iraq. And they all had a plan to get out of Iraq. We're going to close Guantanamo Bay. They just gave him the Nobel Peace Prize afterwards. But even here, The Simpsons, okay, was talking about these machines and voter fraud. So we're going to hit that clip.
Hello, I'd like to vote for president, governor, and anything that will take money away from our parks and libraries.
Use machine number three.
Oh, I can't fit in the booth.
Use the double wide.
Ooh, one of those electronic voting dealies.
One vote for McCain. Thank you.
No, I want to vote for Obama.
Two votes for McCain.
Come on, it's time for a change.
Three votes for McCain.
No, no, no!
Six votes for President McCain.
Hey, I only meant one of those votes for McCain. This machine is rigged! Must tell President McCain! This doesn't happen in America. Maybe Ohio, but not in America.
Maybe in Ohio, but not in America. Now it's the norm in America. No one even questions it like that. All right? That should be alarming. It should be one person, one vote. Cavemen could count. The idea that we can't tally elections freely and fairly and we need all this software is a Johnny nonsense narrative that they have sold to us to rig elections. And now, you know what? They're censoring people for saying that. They're censoring everyone on all sides. This is a right or left issue. Never has been. Never has been. So we're going to go to this right now. We're going to jump in and jump out of it. But this is Bev Harris. And you can still find, very hard to find. It is on YouTube. She has like a YouTube channel, I think, with like 3,000 subscribers. It's gone under the radar. This is a 24-minute demonstration, little mini doc, of how these machines are absolutely 100% fraudulent. Okay?
HBO documentary Hacking Democracy. Now, in 2003, I found about 40,000 voting machine files. Among these files were the secret programs for the GEMS central tabulator, the central server, the master computer that controls what goes into every voting machine and what comes out of them. A couple years back, I shared these files with a Memphis programmer named Benny Smith, and he has found what I would characterize as a master key to the GEM's master computers.
Ready?
Take. My name is Benny Smith, and I'm born and raised in Memphis, Tennessee.
I found something that it reeked when I first found it. But then the intrigue made me say, well, why is it there? Votes being counted as money.
16,034 votes and 0.3.
Oh, wait a minute.
You can divide them.
So the master computer can divide whole votes up into fractions, and we'll see what that can do to an election.
This thing becomes God to determine who the sheriff will always be, who the district attorney will always be, who the mayor will always be. Contract signing authority belongs to whoever I decide the winner is going to be.
There's a lot of assumptions being made by the public, and when you actually go out in the field and try to authenticate each step, it's very surprising, really.
I'm tired of her camera being on me. I don't want her near me.
By the way, this is an attorney. This is because it's cut off here. You know, maybe we should do a little bit of the dick-a-dick-a-do, see if we can't get it to that much. At least see Gene Gehring, okay, representing Shelby County, Tennessee. Now, I want to start here. First of all, this is a grandmother, a woman, talk about identity politics, and then you have a young black man, all right, that are going into this. They're certainly not the scourge of domestic terror or white supremacy. And by the way, this is a decade and a half plus old. Fraction magic, black box voting, we're not even talking about those things. Yeah, every time I seem to bring them up with someone who is putting out a book or promoting, they're well aware of them, but it's just never part of their talking points. Why is that? Let's keep going here.
Okay. And there's nor this link. In other words, we're not able to give them what they want at all.
Hey, hey, hey.
Watch what happens if you cap a candidate's results at 43% or any percent. And now imagine if the default setting is to hide the decimals. Right now, the GEMS program is installed and counting votes in 25 states and 616 jurisdictions. But fractional counting began.
And again, that is decades ago. And if you think GEMS was the only one, or there's not new proprietary software, you know, back in the day, it was like the Diebold machines. You can't even say the other D word. You might not have dominion over that word. They might come and sue you if you say anything nefarious is going on, even though they have proprietary software that cannot be audited.
To migrate from the GEMS program into other vendors. Voting systems which count votes as fractions may count as many as 99% of all American votes in 2016.
We have these systems that are just simply not operating in a way that's accountable to the public.
When we asked, why couldn't we get to the central tabulator, the intimidation that occurred there? If you ask another question, you're going to jail.
My name is John Brakey. I'm an election integrity activist in Tucson, Arizona. You know, I caught them breaking and entering into the computers. I could actually see them going into the system that they're currently using. Well, anyway, that computer was not supposed to have been open until the next morning because it was under seal by political parties, both the Republicans and the Democrats.
Now, again, I don't trust either political party, but we saw similar things. Okay, now again, this is in the run-up to the 2016 election. Okay, so almost a decade ago, this woman's been doing this work forever. We talked about hacking democracy, 2006. Things have only gotten worse. We saw other video during the 2020 election that is very similar to this. Like, remember the water pipe breaking? And still, did anybody go to jail for that? Was anybody held accountable for that? Surveillance video of obvious crimes. No, no, no. If you said they were obvious crimes, okay, and you had any political weight behind you, they'd sue your ass.
Wow.
These are the official results, and I'm offer no explanation.
77%. Did you just catch that? Did you just catch that, everybody? Right there? Huh? 18,000 votes missing. 18,000.
Of all electronic voting in this country is conducted by one manufacturer.
Here's my policy and my procedure that you do not take pictures of that room.
Your policies, you cannot rewrite Florida Sunshine Law.
Hey. Letter said, well, we sent the data to ESNS, the vendor, they fixed it, or they remoted it into our computers.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony that you do give in this cause will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you.
So they could remote into your machine?
A secure remote, called WebEx.
So what exactly did they do remotely?
What they did was a couple of things, and they have to speak to this. What I saw them do was run scripts against the database.
If you think some of the things you've just seen look...
So, again, the first 5 minutes of this documentary, it's 20 minutes long. We're going to shift gears. We're going to talk global health security when we get back. But again, that's a big issue. And one of the things that InfoWars has done is talked about that big issue for a very long time. Support Alex Jones, InfoWarsStore.com right now. Get the supplements, get the books. Back after this with more. And we are back. It's the fourth hour of the Alex Jones Show. I am Jason Burmis. We're going to shift gears away from elections and into, quote unquote, global health security. Now, there's been a fair amount of attention given to the WHO pandemic treaty, and that's a good thing, all right? We don't want to be a part of that, but one of the things people don't understand is the United States basically wrote that up. So when you see the debunkings of it or the fact checks, they always say, well, when you sign on, everything's going to be voluntary, and if you don't want to be a part of it, you don't have to. They're just suggestions. Just like there were just suggestions from the CDC and there were just suggestions from the FDA. And all of that stemmed down from just suggestions of the World Health Organization and the United Nations, just suggestions. However, already we have a globalized biomedical techno-fascist program in here. Oh, and we're going to find out about it from that lady. But it's right here. I mean, you can read it. 64 pages, U.S. Government Global Health Security Strategy 2024. And we're going to read some of this stuff. So, yes, should we still be fighting this pandemic? Absolutely. If you don't think the infrastructure is already in effect and they just passed it, you're not paying attention. This is April 2024. I'm gonna read the inception here. And again, down the line, when we do this, it is everything that we're seeing otherwise. Let's start it right here. Obviously, the COVID-19 pandemic had and continues to have. Let me see if we can make this just a little bigger for everybody. There we go. Had and continues to have a profound impact on our nation and the world. Yeah, because you funded it for the next decade and you don't want to give up any authoritarian power. And now people like lawyer and civil rights attorney Bobby Ann Cox are having to fight New York State for mandatory quarantine camps. Yeah, they tried to put quarantine camps in the United States, in New York. She wins in court. They're appealing it right now. Yeah, it is still affecting people. Just want everybody to know. They want it to affect you forever. They don't want to give up those authoritarian rules. This is the quote-unquote New World Order Alex has talked about. More than 1 million Americans have lost their lives, and nearly 7 million Americans have been hospitalized, leaving families grieving and communities forever changed. We experienced the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression. As weakness in our supply chains were exposed, small businesses struggled to stay afloat because you shut them down. And again, the supply chains were shut down by you. Hey, this was all by design. And it's so obvious it was by design. And yet right? They're still going for it. It's, of course, this is signed by Joe Biden. Joe Biden runs nothing. But these demons, all right? And that's, look, I'm not bringing it to you interdimensional demon style. I'm not telling you to pray to Jesus. I'm saying if demons were real, all right, these people are acting demonic. They're not only about power and control over the rest of the species, but ultimately our demise in a very real transhumanist agenda that is mobilized and enabled by this biomedical fascism that we've seen. All right? I'm going to say it again. 2020, all right? That was when the predator class decided they were going into the bio-nano era. They put it on paper. It's in the NASA Future Strategic Warfare 2025 document from 2001. All right? And then all of a sudden, billions of people globally are taking bio-nano shots, mandatory, multiple of them. You think that's an accident? No, that's the step into their virtual age. And their virtual age, depending on where you land, is either fully transhuman or post-human. No, thank you. No, thank you. I'm going to continue to read. I'm going to try to keep reading. That's it. Small businesses struggled to stay afloat, and 20 million Americans lost their jobs. Largest wealth transfer in history. Of real resources, by the way. Not just paper fiat. Real resources. And we saw how the global health challenge caused local consequences for our hospitals, our schools, and our communities. No sector of the economy or society was immune. That is why, since day one, I have been committed to ensuring that our nation prepared for a future pandemic and all biological threats, including strengthening and investing in global health security. You know, I've done this fourth hour before, and I've played the Global Health Fund clip of Biden, again, introduced by Bill Gates, all the lapdog leaders there, Macron, Trudeau, all of it. And it's not the 20-to-1 profit margin that Bill Gates bragged about at Davos via the hate and lie shots he was already putting out. No, it's a 31-to-1 return for shiznizzle like thizzle. You get it? You understand? Over the last 3 years, we have more than doubled our global health partnerships. Oh. Working directly with 50 countries. I think they threw $81 billion at it right now. 50 countries to ensure they can more effectively prevent, detect, and control outbreaks. And we are working with partners to support an additional 50 countries to save even more lives and minimize economic loss. And really, they're very open about how this is building a new economy. This is not just the Internet of Things, which has already been in place for a very long time now. And they've already beta tested the Internet of Bodies in many respects during the War of Terror when they harnessed the biometric information of so many individuals. This is it, though. This is from beta, Internet of Bodies, into, again, alpha and then consumer level. Same thing with the New World Order we're currently in right now. This is like a step behind because they've already got so much of their global governance model in place. And as I illustrated in the beginning, do we even have free and fair elections on any type of real level at this point? Will we in 2024? I don't know. I mean, I can hope and I can pray and I can talk about it. But at the end of the day, we'll see. We'll see if we can overcome those very real obstacles. With a strong bipartisan support from Congress. Yeah, because they're both terrible. Again, they want to pass another $95 billion. For Ukraine, for Taiwan, for Israel, while we're literally on the verge of possibly not only proxy wars between us and first world nations, but a first world conflict, insanity. Insanity. That doesn't show you the uniparty that Tom Renz is now talking about. And boy, Tom Renz has come a long way, man. I remember meeting Tom Renz 2.5 years ago, Myrtle Beach Reawaken America tour. And he was still on the lab leak theory. Ain't no leak. It's the real deal. It's a planned event. And, you know, I see that Biden, I think he was a stenographer with Benny Johnson. I've interviewed him twice, by the way, in the last 6 months. And we talked about this as well, especially with the COVID-1984 nightmare and how he does it. He believes it was probably released. No kidding. That's the real narrative they don't want you to know about, because that delegitimizes this whole thing. And take a look, guys. Who's it involved? Oh, look at this. We are all working to make life-saving medicines and vaccines more rapidly available in health emergencies, including through supporting Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance, and the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness Innovations. And we are leading efforts to ensure international financial institutions, just like I said, such as the World Bank, scale up lending for pandemic prevention, preparedness, and response. Because health security, economic security, climate security, and national security are all related. See how that works? Sneak in the climate, too. Now, not just the economy. So when we come back in the final segment of the fourth hour, I am actually going to show you who some of these people are and what they're talking about. And surprise, surprise, because again, I get surprised. I don't know it all. I learn stuff. That's why you do your own research. Stephanie Psaki, and yes, that is the sister of Jen Psaki. That was buried. That was hard to find. Had to find it from a 2013 New York Times article. There's three of them. And this one is the senior advisor on human rights and gender equity over at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Back with a final powerful segment. Go hit InfoWarsStore.com up right now. Get the supplements. Get the books. Support free speech. Support Alex Jones. Back with the final segment after this. Final segment of the Alex Jones Show. I am Jason Burmis. And by the way, if you want to check my stuff out, I do a show over at Patriot.tv called Making Sense of the Madness. Interview a lot of interesting characters over there. In fact, recently interviewed the ex-prime minister of Great Britain for an hour, Liz Truss. Never thought something like that was going to happen. I got a night show over at TNTRadio.live where Michael Yon and other great guests have been gracious enough to grace my presence and allow me to interview them. All right. We're going to get into the video in a second of this forum with Jen Psaki's sister, Stephanie Psaki. But first, I want to go to this slide right here. Okay. And again, 64-page document, but this is very important. And it shows you how it is really in conjunction with the United Nations, with the SDGs, with the ESGs, with this whole globalist agenda. This is all just repackaged New World Order command and control garbage. And you can see right here, surveillance and early warning systems, global and regional organizations, bend the knee to the World Health Organization, let us surveil everything you do, national health systems. Do you trust the NHIS? Do you? I don't. Legal frameworks, international agreements like the International Health Regulations on Biological Weapons Convention, Paris Agreement, and anticipated, see, we're anticipating that pandemic accord. Oh, they already think they got it in the bag, baby. Help strengthen global health security by mandating reporting and response to health emergencies and addressing biological, environmental, and pandemic threats. Environment, see, it's all climate. They are just all about it. Full control over everything. Climate crisis. All right. I'm going to shut my mouth. I'm going to bring the video up. And again, this is they put this stuff out themselves. It's like an hour long. Obviously, we're not going to play anywhere near that. But so many stunning admissions are made in like the first couple of minutes. Again, how this is going to be a new economic system. We're all about authoritarianism. And they're gleefully smiling about it. Like what? They're the saviors. Do you trust the Psaki family? I mean, Jen Psaki, the thing she had to say as the press secretary and then got her little MSNBC job and the thing she said since, over the top. Over the top deception. I mean, unbelievable. Let's do it.
So today we are absolutely delighted to be joined by Dr. Stephanie Psaki, who is the Deputy Senior Director for Global Health Security and Biodefense at the National Security Council.
The woman's on the National Security Council, everybody. Did you forget maybe from the last segment? Senior Advisor on Human Rights and Gender Equity. I mean, we only got a few more minutes left, so we better just play this thing.
And the Deputy Assistant to the President and the inaugural U.S. coordinator for global health security. How do you fit all that on a business card? I'm not sure. Dr. Psaki is...
The coordinator for global health security is Stephanie Psaki.
...is a social demographer with extensive expertise in the intersections of gender, health, and education. She has a PhD in public health from Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health.
Gender, health, and education. We've seen how good that is. This is who we want in charge of stuff, right, Stephanie Psaki? And I'm really glad that we've already passed that thing with 50 countries and $81 billion that is just frothing at the mouth for the WHO pandemic accord they're trying to pass. Wow.
And a master's of science degree from the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health in the population and international health domain. So, Stephanie, thank you for joining us, and we really look forward to getting the scoop on this new global strategy. So why don't we just give you a few minutes to set the stage here. This strategy is coming on the back of a number of other policy documents, including the National Biodefense Strategy and Implementation Plan. So that's mostly focused on the U.S., and what you're working on is much broader than that, kind of a broader framework. We understand that the strategy aims to improve capabilities to combat bio risks from every source, whether they're naturally occurring, intentional, or accidental.
See, again, that gives them the bioterror, the leaky leak, and their favorite, the zoonotic. But again, they laid it out. That's why I read the legal framework. But again, this is a global framework.
The opening premise of the strategy is one that motivates all of our work at CSIS and the Alliance. New threats continue to proliferate, and we need to be better prepared. We know that the drivers of new outbreaks are increasing in intensity, whether that's due to human encroachment on animal habitats, the impacts.
Not real. That's not real. Human encroachment on animal, not real. Not real. No, it's the biological warfare programs that you're waging against the general populace. It's what you call and rebranded gain of function. It's also these quote unquote therapies and medicines and hate and lie shots you call vaccines that are part of that biological attack. But hey, I'll get banned off of every social media platform and be discussed as an agent of Russia and a white supremacist if I dare speak the truth. Sorry, lady.
Climate change, global trade and travel, or the spread of emerging and new technologies.
So again, climate change. All the climate change. The climate change is causing the pandemics. And this is not a new narrative. We've played it here before. Earth 2100. Anthony Fauci is in this thing. It's over a decade and a half old at this point, 2008, I believe it is. And he talks about it. But climate change is going to bring on all these natural pandemics. Ooh, the climate crisis.
The vision and the mission articulated in the new strategy is really to create a world where all people are protected from these health security threats, and it's certainly one we should and could all get behind. So, Stephanie, welcome and congratulations on the new strategy. Please kind of walk us through it. Maybe tell us what motivated it, what's the origin of it, what's new and exciting about it from your standpoint, and what are the most important themes that we should be watching for as it rolls out?
Before she starts, I just want to point out once again, I've done this before with these type of people, how unimpressive they are. How unimpressive they are. They got their talking points. They're reading down the line on notes and things that have really been written for them. These people do not impress me. I don't have a note written down. I'm not perfect. But I know head to head in a real debate where they don't just get their talking points, eat them alive. Eat them alive.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Gerberding, Senator Burr, for taking the time to do this. Thank you to the CSIS team. I won't run through everyone since you did such a great job with that. It is very exciting to have a chance to talk about this strategy, which I have been working on, but more than me, the team across the U.S. government has been working on for a long time. So
again, this whole thing in the works, and it's not just under the Biden administration. It's not how you get to Operation Warp Speed. All right. These people have been in these bureaucracies for some time, including her.
So As you mentioned, it's coming out officially next week on April 16th. Stay tuned. But I'm excited to give a preview of it today.
So they pre-recorded this. It is now 8 days old. They released that document. It's in full effect. It's not a preview anymore. All right? This is the biomedical fascistic takeover of everything under the guise of security, even without your global pandemic accord, everybody.
So since day one, President Biden has focused on ensuring that the United States is better prepared for the next pandemic. He came into office, as we all remember, in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic. I think we all know here today, but it bears repeating, that U.S. national security and prosperity depend on countries around the world being prepared to prevent outbreaks when possible and to rapidly detect and respond to emerging infectious disease threats when they occur. We saw that very acutely in COVID-19, but the threats have continued since that time. So the goal,
like the monkeypox or anything invisible they want to tell you, is Johnny nonsense. They don't care about you. The response shows they don't care about you.
The goal of the new global health security strategy is to lay out the Biden-Harris administration's approach to working with partners across the world to do just that, to make sure that we are better prepared and ideally we prevent the next pandemic.
We need to get out of the United Nations. We need the United Nations out of the U.S. We need to sever all ties with these organizations. We need to rein in our national security apparatus in a way that has never been done in American history. And we have to find a way to ensure free and fair elections by destroying the current system of machines, mail-in ballots, okay? No audits, no criminal accountability. This has been the Alex Jones Show. I am Jason Burmess. Follow me on X at Jason Burmess. That's where you can find my TNT and Patriot.tv stuff. And remember, it's not about left or right. It's always about right and wrong. I absolutely love you guys. Go support Alex Jones at InfoWarsStore.com. And we will see you all on the flip side.